across the UK, online and on DAB. The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment. For those about to talk, we salute you.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
I have, dozens of loves in my life. Dozens. But one slightly eccentric one is a love of language and new phrases. And every day now comes new phrases, new ways of using this most fantastic thing that we have, language. Kath, good evening.
Hello.
So we're coming through, having watched an hour of Ian Lee, and we'll get onto that in just a second. We're coming through from the Talk Radio production suite.
It's very grand.
On our way to the studio, and you told me that the word for it is toxic masculinity. Though,
yes.
This is like 90 seconds ago.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
Toxic masculinity. We're now recognising that the suppression of your own feelings that a lot of men have been trained to do since they were little boys. Don't cry, boys, don't cry.
Mm-hmm.
And the stifling of other people's, don't be like that, mate.
Okay.
Is not good for anyone.
Where did this one come from?
I don't know. It's been thrown around quite a lot at the moment. Toxic masculinity.
Is it going on in the jungle?
I think it's safe to say that yes, it is.
Just lower your voice and you get away with it. Yes, it is.
I think we know.
Okay. So, toxic masculinity. What I find with new phrases, gentle listener, I dare say it might be the same with you, is if I can get it into a conversation within about 48 hours of hearing it, then I've got it for good. Otherwise, it goes and mm-hmm. it's gone. The other one I got today, or was it yesterday? I was reading a comment by a journalist, fine journalist, called, I think, Peter Bradshaw. And he took issue with Boris Johnson and, to a lesser extent, Jeremy Corbyn for their use of the phrase has no place. He said that Boris Johnson had said that the worst excesses of racism have no place here in Britain. And Bradshaw's point was, is he saying that they have their place somewhere else? And what could he possibly be thinking of? Obviously not America, surely. And Trump, surely. But then he went on to say that Jeremy Corbyn had used the same phrase, has no place, when he said that anti-Semitism has no place in the Labour Party and has no place in a civilised society. So he said Corbyn kind of got away with it. But this phrase, having no place, is another one that I'm not going to use. Don't like that one. Doesn't work for me particularly. But I do find myself experimenting with things. All my life, beginning a sentence in answer to somebody asked me a question. Asked me a question like, I don't know, anything you like. Like, did I have a good journey here?
Did you have an excellent journey?
Well, I would say well, like that.
Yeah.
I'm a weller. I've always been a weller.
You know, the millennial would respond, what, so.
So, is that, that's where I'm going.
It drives me nuts.
That's where I'm going. Drives me nuts. Drives me nuts.
Because the inference is that you've interrupted them.
Yeah. And you hear it on the radio now. You cannot be an expert on something. You know, a brain surgeon or an expert on, I don't know, anything you like. And the interviewer will say, so, what's the very latest on this then? And they'll go, so, we've found, and I go, ah, no, shut up, nobody talks like that. Have you ever met a real person who said so instead of well?
Yes.
Who?
They tend to be younger.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, God.
It rubs off, you see.
Comes at you every direction now, doesn't it? I get my bus pass in 4 days.
So you get your bus pass?
Well, I'm not. So there's that one. Now, Theresa May's got a tick, a verbal tick.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I say it, she's not alone in this one. I can't think of a prominent politician who hasn't got the same tick.
Is it Let Me Be Clear?
That's the one. That's the one.
Why don't you just do it instead
I'm
of announcing
lying
it?
I'm in the bar first thing in the morning and I'm listening to whatever I'm listening to and it's a politician. We've been very clear. Let me be clear. We have been very clear all along. We are very clear. What does it mean? Does it mean that they want think time? Is it thinking time? Or are they aware that actually they're not clear?
Well, that's...
And so appearing clear is more important than whatever the rest of the answer is.
There is a chastisement in we have been very clear, isn't it? As in, if you don't get it, it's because you're not paying attention. We've been very clear.
I'm listening, but at the same time, I'm noticing something a bit spooky. Mm-hmm. One of the things that in the talk radio production suite we discussed this evening was crying. And Lewis has called up apropos the fact that he's been crying all day. And I'd like to talk to Lewis about that. Hello, Lewis.
Hello, Tommy.
You all right, mate?
Hi. The last time I called in, Rufus was on. I had a really crappy Batman story. My girlfriend, I found out this morning, was been cheating on me. We've been together for 5 years, okay? And it's the first relationship I've been in since my previous girlfriend that died. And I put all my trust into this relationship, and to find out that she's been like, you know, checking around, it's you know, it's really hard. I just heard it on the radio. I listen every night. I heard it on the radio about men crying and stuff. I just thought I had to phone in without even thinking beforehand, actually.
Sorry, where did you hear that? Because we haven't mentioned it yet.
No, on the radio, you talked about men crying.
I did. Somebody did. Rufus did.
No. Today,
somebody on talk radio did.
Just now, today, yeah.
Was it when we were talking about men's emotions? And
Yeah.
Oh, I see,
it just made me call in. You know,
I see,
sorry.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry that you're going through heartache, and I'm...
But I've been crying.
Even...
You know, I'm a man, and all this sort of shit. But sorry.
No, hang on. don't get in the way of me being human with you.
And I can't take how the world is going at the moment,
All right. Well, now...
With all this masculinity stuff.
Okay. Just take a break for a second, because you've got some lots of feet now in lots of different bits of territory. Just take the fact that... On behalf of everybody listening, I want to say I'm sorry that you're in a bad way, and doubly sorry, extremely sorry about what you told us about our previous girlfriend. So just take that one.
It was my baby that died as well before, you know. I don't think I thought this very properly, actually, ringing in now. I just thought it was like...
All right, well, thank you very much indeed for your call.
Okay.
I'm sorry you're in a bad place. I would, if you're still listening, and I'm sure you are, Lewis needs to see somebody, I think. That's what people do. If you hurt your leg, you don't just hobble around, you go to A&E. Or you go and, if you've got a cough that won't go away, you go to the doctor. And if you're in a very bad place between your ears, then you go and talk first to your doctor, perhaps, and then to somebody else. Isn't that about right?
I think so.
We wanted to talk a little bit about crying, though, because on the show this evening, we want to talk about Ian in the jungle, because he's doing a fantastic job, I have to say. I have to say, he's surprised even me. And, you know, I'm a big fan of the guy. I'm very fond of him. But he's playing a blinder. He's absolutely out of his skin, isn't he?
Mm.
And knowing him a little bit, nowhere near as well as you do, I can tell when he's being absolutely genuine, which is almost all of the time. But I can also tell when a little light goes on upstairs and he thinks to himself, I'll go this way with this. And then he goes back into himself. So he's at work, isn't he?
Well, I think that he has, having watched it and seen him retreat into his shell a little bit and be picked on and chided and made to feel less than, watch him go into a shell and then rally. Sometimes I feel like those little bursts are what happens when someone goes, do you know what, I'm going to push it a bit further.
Yeah.
Because otherwise this is just too awful.
Is he likely to do a show as soon as he's free from this commitment?
Yeah.
From Australia?
Yeah. New Zealand. He's going to go and stay with his family in New Zealand.
Oh,
for
okay.
a week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know he had family.
Yeah, his sister moved out there a couple of years ago and they haven't seen each other since, so it's worked out quite nicely.
Isn't that what a life?
Yeah.
What a life.
He didn't think he was going to see her for a while.
Fantastic. Okay, so fingers crossed. My other half looked up from her iPad earlier this evening and said he could win it. That's her inside read on the social media, all social media that's quite alive with I'm a Celebrity, isn't
it? Definitely. And this storyline, I think it's a shame that this is the storyline that's brought him to people's attention, because I wish that it had been the storyline of him having fun and being kind and generous and just generally a nice bloke to be around.
Does that win you I'm a Celebrity?
I think the combination of that and what he's enduring is what might win him I'm a Celebrity.
People are always telling me that the public have the greatest affection for people who have bounced back.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you see it too?
I think that they were ready to dislike, a lot of people were ready to dislike him when he first went in, because they were expecting 11 o'clock show Ian, who was a character,
mm-hmm.
a snidey, snipey, mm-hmm. Trickster, who seemed to have no compassion for people and used to pick on weaker people. I think that was the image that a lot of people had, if they remembered him at all.
Right.
The younger kids thought, who the hell's this beardy bloke? You know. So I think that they feel like they've discovered someone, and that's always mm-hmm. a bonus, isn't it?
Mm, and now they know him inside out. Well, and the next time he's on the radio, everybody listening will just know him as a person even better than they will have pieced him together from his previous television and all his quite effervescent radio.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be interesting in itself.
Yeah.
So there'll be people like me listening to see whether I'm a Celebrity has enhanced his broadcasting ability, which is great, even further. So there's always something to look out for, isn't there?
Yeah.
When Dennis Wise got chucked off this evening, they were talking to him, Ant and Deck, and we'll come back to them. They were talking to him, and I found his answer to something so boring, because the man, you know, just has no great powers of...
It was a match of the day answer, wasn't it?
Perception, yes. That I found myself doing something that I do, but I'm not proud of, and that's looking at people's faces and trying to work out things, like, for example, whether he dyed his hair. And I decided he might well do, because there was not a hint of grey there. It was just a little bit too blue-black, as I remember him as a footballer. And then I found myself going, and this is really catty, and but I'll admit to it, I found myself thinking, I wonder how much he spent on his teeth. That's pathetic that I should be reduced to that. But on the other hand, when I'm not, you know, switched on by what somebody's got to say, then my eyes will take over. And also, he looks to me as though he could use a good fish supper.
Yes. I think they've all lost a lot of weight.
Has he lost weight?
Yeah, and they didn't have enough. He didn't have a lot of weight to lose in the first place.
No. And he's, as I say, kept himself quite fit.
He has.
Yeah.
Very spry.
And you find yourself noticing these things, don't you? Because we often have the television on, but the sound down in our house. And then all you can do is notice things about Piers Morgan or the weather bloke or whatever. Tell what I notice most of all about television now that I'm sort of able to watch it and not listen to it, is that all the men are completely covered up and almost all the women are showing as much flesh as they can. That's got to change, hasn't it?
You would think so. You would think so. But the combinations are still odd, aren't they? So you imagine, well, Piers Morgan sitting next to Susanna Reid.
Reid.
She's quite a bit younger than he is. The dynamic is always an odd kind of... Is it paternal? Is he supposed to be the older... What is that?
Oh, no, it's always... they're always a couple, aren't they? The boy-girl thing on the sofa.
But they're not equals, are they?
No.
The other day I was watching a thing with Philip Schofield, and he was doing a piece to camera with his wife.
Okay.
And it looked odd, because you had two people of the same age...
Yes.
...together, and you just don't see it.
No, generally speaking, the woman is a bit younger than the man.
And the man's senior.
But why is it that women... In about 10 years' time, I don't think women will be required by television and the media in general to show as much skin as they generally can. It's just starting to look odd to me. So you get Piers Morgan and the weather guy. This is on GMTV or whatever it's called now, which is worth watching, frankly, because it's so awkward. with Piers Morgan just talking over everybody and being and think, you know, cherishing his own opinions enormously. But he's buttoned up literally, and the weather guy who stands there, bit of a prop, he's buttoned up right up, right up. Mm-hmm. And the two women, the newsreader and Susanna Reid, are showing everything down to cleavage and bare arms. And presumably...
No tights either.
Is that... How do you know that?
Well, because you see a lot of leg, don't you? But it,
no tights?
Yeah, well, the thing is, they've got shiny legs, so there's no tights. This is black tights weather now. It's freezing cold. You don't want to be wearing a flesh-coloured tight walking around.
Can you tell if a woman's wearing tights just by looking at the legs?
Of course.
Bloody hell, I thought I was good and I can't do that one.
Really?
You can tell if a woman is wearing flesh-coloured, see-through... Mm-hmm. Tight,
yeah,
because of the degree of shine on it.
The degree of shine.
Is that typical of your gender?
I think
so.
To
be able to spot that?
I think so, and I think particularly with women, we're trained to take in the whole outfit, aren't we? Top to toe.
Yes, yes, you are.
It's that horrible, the horribly bitchy thing that some women do. I think all women do, but some women do more obviously, which is taking you in from the head all the way down and then back up again before they speak to you.
Yes. Now, I have to watch doing that for obvious reasons, and I'm getting much better at not.
Everyone does it, though. It's an assessment,
I know,
isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I know. But we, you know, we're always trying to make the world a better place, and you know, gender equality and all that is so important, I think. And it's one of the big sort of big shortfalls in what we now like to think of as being the perfect civilization. But your ability to see if somebody on television is wearing tights or not, just at a glance, is very sophisticated. And it reminds me of a friend of mine years ago who was a television vision mixer.
Oh, right.
And he got to know ITV and its studios so well that he could turn on the television and before the credits rolled... He could tell you whether it was a Yorkshire TV studio or an Anglia TV studio or a Central TV studio, blah, 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 mm-hmm. from the quality of the lighting.
Gosh.
I know. That's sad, isn't it?
Expertise.
But expertise. So we were saying about women having to show bits.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been doing...
On TV.
I've been doing the cuttings for Ian's Stay in the Jungle.
Have
you? Clipping out every single bit that he's in, you know, for better or worse, he told me. He wants warts and all. And I've found that despite the fact that I think that his relationship with the men has been the main thread of what's been going on in the jungle, the majority of the pages are taken up with various of the women. Well, three of the women... In the shower.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's never a story. It's just, you know, here they are in the shower.
What's going to happen to these cuttings?
They're in a book.
You're saving them for him?
Yes. He asked me to do that so he could show his mum.
Understood. Do media organisations still have cuttings libraries?
I don't know. I suppose it's all online now.
Well, how do they do that if it's magazine or newspaper? Do newspapers still have... physical cuttings libraries. They used to. Mm. I can remember when I first did some work for the BBC, because I'd worked mostly for commercial, and I got to Broadcasting House and we were researching something and they said, oh, you can go down to the cuttings library and find out about that. So go downstairs to this enormous built room full of head-high cabinets, grey cabinets, with A to AC and then AD to, you know. And so I looked up what I was... after, and then I couldn't resist just going and seeing if there was anything under Boyd, Tommy, you see, and I got to the right cabinet, and I opened it. There were all these files. It's me! Yay! So I opened it, and it couldn't have been thinner. And inside it was a cutting, it was about half an inch high and 2 inches wide, and it just said, Magpie presenter Tommy Boyd is no skateboarder. And that was it.
Oh.
And that was it. My entire life summed up, as far as the BBC were concerned, by my crap skateboarding. So you've collected a book full of cuttings so that Ian can see what's been...
You can show it to his mum and
written
in time...
about the
maybe,
show.
Yeah, maybe
show
just
his him.
About him and, you know, the various characters that he's come into contact with.
Right.
Yeah.
That's very good of you. So have you been taking extra newspapers over the last...
Yeah. Well, I work in a place where we have newspapers, so...
I've seen them lying around. I've never seen anybody reading them.
To be honest, no, I go and get them in the morning. They're very cheap these days, newspapers. I think it's a shame.
They are. And magazines. They're practically giving magazines away, aren't they? So, good evening, dear listener. Ian will be back in this show just as soon as he either gets thrown out or wins. Until then, tonight and tomorrow night, because it looks as though Ian is nailed on to be there for at least another 24 hours, it's myself, Tommy Boyd. We have Kath here as well. Quick reminder that our telephone number is, as ever, Kath?
0344 499 1000.
The time, I will tell you, is 10:22.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
She who never sleeps is how I sometimes refer to you.
Yes.
And how much sleep do you think you manage on average Monday to Friday at the moment?
Well, it's separated sleep. So I get home about 2:30 and I am up with the kids at about 8 o'clock. So it's not that bad.
6 hours.
6 hours. And then
that's not too bad.
And then when the little one's at school, I grab another couple of hours during the day.
I don't know whether that does you any good.
I'm not sure either.
There have been lots of conversations in our house about whether an afternoon nap does you good or just actually slows you down for the rest of the day.
Yeah, there was a moment before the weather got bad that I would walk home the long way from school just so that I could just get a bit of air in my lungs, stretch my legs. And I must say, I did feel a lot better. But at the moment, I'm so exhausted, I'm just crawling home and getting back in bed. Oh, but anyway.
Well, we're giving you tomorrow off, is that right?
Yes.
So you're going to get yourself a... What's your record amount of time for sleeping? What's the longest sleep you've ever had? I'm going to ask Sam the same question.
Recently, I think I managed about 14 hours last weekend.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Do you want to know what the world record is?
Go on.
I'll tell you in a minute. You won't believe it. Sam, what's the longest sleep you've ever had?
Yeah, about 14 or 15, I think.
What was the cause of that?
Was flying back from America. And kick my body into
jet
time
lag.
Really quickly,
jet
I just decided to stay awake for like 40 hours straight.
Yeah. I've got a, wait a minute. I've never added the hours up. I'm just quickly doing mine. What's yours, good listener? You don't have to phone or anything. Just kick it around in your mind. The longest sleep you've ever had. I went to bed at, I reckon, about 10 o'clock at night, and I slept through until 7:30 in the evening the following day. So that's 12... 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21 hours, which is pretty darn good. The record for staying asleep is 11 days, brought about by somebody who had undergone sleep deprivation prior to that. But all the same, 11 days and nights. Been looking into sleep because I've started to notice something and I'm a little bit worried, but not hugely worried. I'll give you an example, concrete example. This morning, I woke up and I turned on the radio and somebody mentioned athletics and sprinting. I think it was to do with Putin and doping and all that. And I thought to myself, oh, we'll never see... What's his name? The sprinter.
Usain Bolt.
The Jamaican, thank you. The sprinter. I can see him. I've got him. That. One of his names begins with a vowel. Come on, what's going on here? No, hang on. And then about an hour later, I forgot this episode, but this has been happening a lot to me. On waking, I have a form of amnesia. On waking, and it lasts about, I suppose, 90 seconds after, maybe a bit longer, after I've woken up from a deep sleep, possibly a dream, I don't know. But I get... You know, name blindness. And it's not the first time. I've noticed it 3 or 4 times. What I don't know is whether it's been like that all my life. Anybody help me out here, Kath? Do you ever get slightly amnesiac?
Well, yeah.
As you wake up?
Not.
I get it slightly worse than that. I've done it a couple of times when, my brain will suddenly click and I'll be awake, but I'll be in the bathroom. So the first sort of 30 seconds of me being awake, I'm not actually conscious.
You're not present?
No.
Isn't that sleepwalking?
possibly. I wouldn't have thought so, because, like, it's one of those that I know that I've gotten, like, obviously I've gotten up and got to this point, but I just don't remember doing it because I've not fully woken up yet.
Right. No, I've got that.
Here's a magic effect of sleep. On a Friday, for really boring reasons, I go and have a nap at my mum and dad's house, which is just around the corner, and it's the house that I grew up in since I was 10. And I wake up in my childhood bedroom from my nap.
Okay, this is getting serious.
And for about 20 seconds on waking, I don't know what year it is.
You're a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what year it is.
Yep.
That is amazing.
It's a magic bit of time travel. Doesn't last very long, but it's quite a nice sensation.
Sometimes as I start to fall asleep, just kind of like you, Kath, I get disorientated and I'm not sure which bed I'm in and whether it's the one that where I live now or the one I slept in the house that we were in before or the bedroom that I used most often when I was a child. Mm. And I have to try and imagine myself looking out of the bedroom window in order to establish, again, like you say, Kath, what year it is. Sleep is ridiculous, really, isn't it? What a waste of time. I hate being asleep.
Oh, I love it.
No, you don't.
Mm, I do.
No, I'll have that argument with you and win easily.
I love being on standby.
You can't love being asleep. You're out. You're cold.
Don't you dream?
It's dead air.
Don't you dream?
Yeah, of course.
Well, it's lovely.
Dreaming is not lovely.
Yes, it is.
You're the first person.
You're having the wrong dreams.
Well, help me. Help everybody. Simon, are your dreams basically anxious and strange? And
they make no sense.
No sense.
Like, I wake up, it's just events, the most bizarre thing ever. I'll be doing one thing and then 5 seconds later, I'll something completely different.
You're listening to Talk Radio and we're talking about sleep and some of its known strangeness, and at least one aspect of its unknown strangeness, which is whether I am alone, or it's an age thing, that in the few minutes after I wake up, I can't remember people's names, I can't remember place names, and I sometimes wonder what year it is and what bed I'm in. And then my brain starts fizzing again. It's got me wondering whether some dementias, have any relation to this experience that I occasionally have whereby I get this sort of forgetfulness or it's, you know, there's complete separation. So I'm going to ask Sam to mention a particular dream, but the phone lines are starting to work. Remind us the number again.
0344 499 1000. I've been looking up sleep while you've been talking.
Excellent.
Did you know that 12% of people dream entirely in black and white?
I did. But only because I'm on the same page on my laptop.
The first one.
Because before colour television was introduced, only 15% of people dreamt in colour, whilst older people dream in black and white more often than younger people.
I know. Older people dream in black and white.
I've never dreamt in black and white.
How do you know?
What do you mean, how do I know? Because it would look like black and white.
I don't think you remember.
Oh, I remember bits of dreams, especially if I'm reminded of them shortly after I've woken up. Something might happen.
Have you never had the dream where you know you're talking to one person, but when you wake up you realise it was the face of a different person?
Yes, yes, and this is where Freud was right, Interpretation of Dreams, 1899. I'm still the only person I know who's actually read it. But everybody thinks they know that Freud thought it was all about sex and he was wrong. And he did think that sex and repressed sexual urges were huge and crucial in our personalities. Mm. But he was right. Freud was right. Everything he said was absolutely on the money. And I really don't like it when you get pop psychiatrists writing little books that come across from that side of the Atlantic, and they often start by saying, "It has now been proven that Sigmund Freud was in fact wrong." But they don't say why or how or where. It's just they can't be bothered to read him and find out what a genius he was. Freud actually said that almost every dream has a sexual connotation. And there are ways of proving that by looking at males or when they are asleep and dreaming.
Oh.
Because there is a clue.
Oh, my God.
Which cannot be mistaken for anything else. And it is discovered that whenever a man is having an REM sleep and therefore dreaming, it's believed, he also has another piece of activity going on.
Wow.
So how could it not be connected one way or another with good old SEX? Sleeping is a waste of time. Going to sleep can be delicious.
Mm.
Drifting in and out of sleep when you are waking up, that is also delicious if you can do that. Keats celebrated it. He called it waking sleepfulness. When you're in that little pocket of, you know, half awake, half asleep. But sleeping is a waste of time. If we could get rid of sleep, we'd be 80% more productive. I made that bit up, that
80%. Well, talking about productivity, man is the only mammal that willingly delays sleep.
Yeah, I can see that.
For productivity, I guess. Oh, I can't go to sleep now. I've got so much to do.
Well, I used to work with dolphins and they never sleep. They never sleep. They die. They drown. Yes. No, it's fact.
Do they...
No.
How do you know?
What do you mean, how do I know? How could they sleep?
Have they got eyelids?
How could the dolphins sleep? Yes.
Okay.
But they move along. Let's take a few phone calls. We are vaguely talking about sleep this evening. And because I had an argument with the barber when I had my hair cut earlier today about what is the best Christmas film, I thought that that was something that's worth kicking around a little bit, along with the fact that since it's in the news, I worked for a period of time in Israel and in Jerusalem. And so if anybody wants to get onto one of the main news topics of the day, then that will be absolutely fine. But let's rush to Joe, who's mobile, but wants to talk about Ian. Is that right, Joe? Off you go.
Hello, yeah. Yes, I do. Thanks very much. Good evening. I've watched the I'm a Celebrity again, and I've got to say, I really think, there's some pretty horrible people in that jungle, because they gave Ian another bad time today on what we've seen, you know. And when he went off and did the trial with Jenny, they're talking behind his back, bad mouthing him, and it's just all this sort of male ego rubbish. And I think he's been brilliant. He's been excellent for the radio station and himself and his family. I'm biased because I've listened to Ian from LBC days, and I really like the guy. I know he's had some struggles in his private life, and I think he's conducted himself so well on that programme, and I really hope he wins it. I really do. My wife and I were voting for him every night, and want to keep him in there, and he's a very strong contender in our eyes, you know.
Well, thank you for voting for him. I noticed something quite interesting, though, about the way the men are behaving and responding.
Yeah.
Did you notice that Dennis Wise went off yesterday, the day after he'd been in the bottom two?
Yeah.
And then who was in the bottom two yesterday? Amir. And who started it today? Amir.
Yes. Yeah.
I think the more desperate they get, the more aggressive they get.
Yeah, yeah, and top marks to Ian for just letting it sort of wash over him, really. And
I think he's sussed him.
Well, the thing is, Ian can hold a good argument or a good debate with anybody, I think. And, you know, some people don't like it when he carries on arguing, but all he's doing is trying to prove a point in a sort of amicable, peaceful, sensible way, and he's true to whatever he believes in. And they didn't give him a chance to finish saying half of the things he was trying to say, and I thought but, you know, fair play to him. He didn't rise to the bait. I think he could have stood up and had a go at a couple of people, but he's been the bigger man, I think, you know.
Joe, thanks very much indeed for your call. Kind of you, and it will get back to Ian, because Kath is keeping a cuttings library of everything that appears in print about Ian.
And a mental note of everything that's said.
Absolutely. And I'm pleased that Joe gave me an opportunity to say that when I'm watching Match of the Day, the experts either say fair play to the guy or all respect. And it's never, you know, it's one or the other. He said it just then, didn't he, Joe? All credit, that's it, all credit. It's either all credit to the lad or fair play to the lad.
Yeah.
Now, the footballers have such a restricted vocabulary, many of them, not all of them, many of them, that they are very clear on the distinction between fair play and all credit. But I'm not. If you got 22 professional footballers in, they would all go, yep, that is all credit to the lad. Yeah, definitely all credit. Or they'd all go together, no, that's fair play to the lad. But I don't know what the distinction is. Alan Shearer does. Okay, we've got Cure Calls, which is fantastic. So what we'll do is we'll hear some important messages and then it's back to the phone lines. I'm Tommy Boyd, looking after things until the much-fated celebrity Ian Lee is back on the radio.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
We can talk Israel and Jerusalem if that is what you would like to do. It's all access the programme. But we are talking about Ian Lee, the celebrity presenter of this slot on a regular basis, who is up the jungle and doing very well. We're also talking about sleep and dreams because his producer, Kath, is becoming known as She Who Never Sleeps. Let's go to Ray, who's mobile. Ray, you're on about dreams. Off you go.
Yes, Tom. Good evening. Good evening, Catherine.
Hiya.
I'm not going to talk about Ian because I think Kath knows my stance on that already, so I'll only upset myself. Yeah, dreams. Did you say that the longest person slept was 11 days?
Yep. Allegedly.
Are you sure he wasn't, in a coma?
No, comas are different from sleep. Marginally different from sleep. When we're asleep, we are marginally less attuned to sensory information than when we're awake. But when we're in a coma, we're completely unable to detect sensory stimulation.
And so was that obviously done in some kind of clinic thing? Because obviously he could have just been in his own bed and said, oh, yeah, I slept for 11 days once.
No, I think since the individual is supposed to have endured sleep deprivation prior to sleeping for 11 days, it was some sort of controlled experience. They do controlled things. That you cannot. When you're a student, a uni student, you can actually eat your grant out by putting yourself up as a guinea pig for various things.
I was going to do it a couple of years ago, simply because of the work I was doing. I was literally getting by on 4 hours. And then when I was off, my days off, I was then waking up after 4 hours sleep. So I was getting by on nothing. And there was this particular trial was people that actually suffer from sleep, because normally they want people that sleep well to do the trials. But the reason I rang in was the longest I've ever slept in one go was 24 hours. But that was after working for 52 hours non-stop.
God, what were you doing?
I was in the police, so basically we were in work for 5 a.m. on a Monday morning to do some arrest warrants. Three people were arrested, and then for the rest of that day we were processing them, interviewing them, waiting around for solicitors, and then we were just about to go home at 10 o'clock that night, and I'd been up since 3 a.m. when the phone went and an informant was ringing with information about a possible firearm.
Gosh.
So we had to stay on. We then had to go try and get some other information to corroborate it. Can't just sort of take one person's word.
You've been out of the police force for a while now, have you?
7 years, yeah. So I joined in early 90s and left in 2010. So I did 17 years. And then, to cut long story short, by the time we then got a warrant, we had to wake up a judge at 3 a.m. and he was very impressed.
God.
Wait for the firearms team from central London, and then we went through the next door at 6 a.m, found the gun, so we had to work all the way through that day, and then we finished in the early hours of the following day, so Wednesday, and then got home. By the time I got home, it was about 8 a.m. on the Wednesday, and then slept till 8 a.m. on the Thursday.
Good story. Thank you, Ray, for your call, very much indeed, and we'll pass on your mixed wishes to Ian when he gets back. I always used to think I could spot coppers on phone in radio. But I couldn't spot him.
No, he's been out for a while.
I got vain about it when I was on another radio station and this chap came and he told a story. And I said, really? I said, where did you hear that? He said, our colleague informed me. And I just went, you're a copper.
Yeah.
And he went, how did you know?
Yeah.
And I said, because the rest of us, a mate tells us.
Here's another way you can tell with police officers. They tell you in the present tense. So I'm walking down the street.
Really?
And yes. He says to me,
"Yes."
They go immediately into present tense. They're talking about the past. So I'm proceeding in the direction of the Tower of London.
Right.
And gentleman is approaching me.
Yeah.
With a smile on his face, they slip into the present. It's a very odd thing. I don't know whether that's the way they're trained to take notes.
No, that's that. Yes. Oh, contemporaneous. There's a word that we only ever use in connection with the police force. How do you know if a boxer is talking to you? Refers to himself in the third person.
Oh, yeah.
Frank Bruno thinks that's a good idea. So Lennox was walking along the street. Let's take another call. We'll rush to Andrew, who's next in South East London. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Tommy. Hello, Kev.
Hi.
Tommy, I wanted to advise you, to the best of my scientific knowledge, that dolphins sleep hemispherically.
Oh.
Yes, we've heard this. Explain.
They're able to shut down one side of their brain, and if they're swimming in formation, then the lead dolphin, and it's the same with certain types of bird who swim, who fly in formation, the lead bird or the lead dolphin is fully awake, but the rest of them are just following and only using half their brain while the other part of the brain is asleep.
Okay, when I worked with dolphins, I heard this story but didn't believe it. And I'm not sure... Carry on.
I've read it in scientific literature, so I believe it to be true. But whether that, you know, you can't tell anything these days.
No, no. I'm looking at a table here of how long various animals sleep. Andrew, and you seem to be a well-informed person. You possibly work in a white shirt, or have done.
I did ecology at Queen Mary in Westfield, so yeah, that does help.
Again, I'm pretty good at this sort of thing. So have a guess, then, off the top of your head. How much sleep do you think a cow needs in a 24-hour period? Kath?
Ooh.
Sam?
12 hours.
12 hours?
No.
Kath?
I would say 6.
Sam?
I'll go less. I'll go 5.
3.9 hours. The cow only needs 3.9 hours sleep.
Oh, because they do nothing.
They do nothing. What is the animal... You'll be
when
very
they're just sitting in the field, Tommy. When they're just sitting in the field, they're not doing anything. They look as though they're asleep, even though their eyes are open.
Yes. But they're just sitting there. Okay, according to this information that I have in front of me, Andrew, at this moment in time, it says that the bottlenose dolphin sleeps for 10.4 hours a day. Well, that's simply hogwash.
You two reminded me of a Stuart Leaf sketch where he concludes, you can prove anything with facts.
You can prove anything with facts.
Can I just say on a personal basis, I had wonderful dreams since I stopped watching television.
Ah. Now
when did you stop watching television?
When they knocked at my door and said, have you got a licence?
South East London joke there, wasn't it, mate, eh?
Yes, sir.
Rodney. Anyway, the giraffe... Anybody want to have a punt at how much sleep the giraffe needs in 24 hours, Kath?
I'm going to go 3 again. It's another herbivore that does nothing.
3 hours sleep, Sam.
No, I'm going high on this one. I'll go 14.
They can't afford to. They'll get eaten by lions.
Oh, good point.
I don't think lions take giraffes, but we'll ask Andrew 2 questions. Andrew, how much sleep do you think a giraffe needs? And do lions take giraffes in the wild?
I've seen that on the film, a lion climbing on a giraffe's back.
I have evidence.
Oh, that's horrible. That's horrible.
Yeah.
I think some of these animals that live with lions, you'd never sleep, would you?
No, exactly.
No.
Exactly. Got to have your wits about you.
1.9 hours is all a giraffe needs.
That'll do.
Eh?
How many?
1.9 hours.
Gosh.
Less than 2 hours.
They really are terrified.
Quick nap. Yeah. Well, we'll get them... I wonder what sort of producers they'd make. And the longest required on a regular basis by any mammal is the brown bat, which needs 19.9 hours sleep a day. Why?
I could be a brown bat.
But why? Why does a brown bat need so much sleep?
Is it out all night?
Yeah, but not clubbing.
How do you know?
I don't know. All right, Andrew, great of you to call. Thank you very much indeed, friend.
Thank you.
Talk to you again sometime. Billy's next in Milton Keynes. Billy, good evening to you. Thank you for calling.
How you doing?
Never been better.
I'm all right, Billy.
Good, good, good. I just wanted to ring in because talking about Ian. I had a bit of a breakthrough today because one of the lads that I know, he kind of always speaks because he knows that I sometimes interact with Ian online and stuff like that. And he's typical those three lads that are in that jungle.
Yeah.
And he came across today and he messaged me. He said, "You know what?" He said, "I do feel sorry for him because I think the first day that Ian cried, the first thing he did was tweet, oh, your mate's crying and all this kind of thing. And he was just typical silly banter, which, you know, you ignore. But he messaged me today, and I just think Ian inadvertently is doing the thing that he feels really passionately about, and that's raising awareness for, you know, anxiety and mental health issues. And it's unfortunate that he's got to be a guinea pig, but
I disagree. I don't think he's doing that.
Yeah.
I don't mean
he's doing it on purpose.
No,
I mean
that's
it. It's happening, yeah.
That's definitely what's happening, but he's certainly not doing it on purpose. I don't think he wants to be a poster boy for mental health problems. He's happy to talk about it, but I know that he doesn't want to be defined by it, and I think that he will be horrified that actually this has been the main thrust of what people have been interested in, really.
But
at the same time,
you know better than I do.
But at the same time, it's a really important conversation to be had, and I think, you know, I don't think he realises the extent to which the boys are going for him. I'm kind of glad about that.
Yeah, that's true, because obviously we get the benefit of the third party kind of fly on the wall, watching the conversations that go on behind his back. But obviously that's something that we're all guilty of, you know, like, and I'm certainly not defending it, because they're being really nasty. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really spiteful, and it is uncomfortable to watch. But I'm just really pleased for him. I definitely think that he's cottoned on to the fact, just by the way the voting's going, that he's probably cottoned onto it quicker than they did. Like, I think Dennis going tonight, the other two would have just gone, oh, right. They're definitely kind of, do you know what I mean? They're definitely swaying towards Ian. And good luck to him. I think he's brilliant. I think, you know, he doesn't have to do it. He doesn't have to play a game. This game that they're talking about, he doesn't have to play a game. He just has to be naturally just carry on. And if he winds them up and they want to be, he said a rude word then, if they want to be rubbish about it, then we're just going to continue to dislike them. So,
Billy, thank you for your call. And again, it will get back to Ian, and indeed you'll have an opportunity to tell him what you think pretty soon. But as we said, he might win it. I'm going to squeeze Julian in Bromley just before we find out what's happening in the world at the next bout of world news. Julie.
Hey, Tommy.
Thank you for calling.
Hi, Kat.
Hi, Tommy. Julie.
I wanted to ask you a question regarding sleep. You know, as you're just drifting off to sleep, and then sometimes you do a jump.
Yes.
I always think, in my mind, I'm always tripping over a curb. My husband is always falling off a chair. Have you got a particular thing that you're doing when you do a jump?
Yeah, I'm often on a motorbike. Suddenly, I'm on a motorbike. One minute, I'm having normal thoughts. You know, or I must remember to charge my phone up when I... And then, on my motorbike, and bang, I do the jump.
I had one the other day, and it was really quite powerful. And I was in a car, and I drove off a bridge. All of a sudden, just swerved off the road. Right. That was what
woke
me up.
It's always the same thing. It's tripping up a curb, and that's what makes me jump.
Have you ever tripped up on a curb in a bad way?
Not particularly, but that's what always wakes me up. My husband, for him, is always him falling off a chair. So,
I'll tell you the next stage, because I'm there now, and this doesn't happen to me every time, but quite often I find myself going, oh, here we are, we're sleeping now, because this is ridiculous. And I just have a moment, I think it's called something like sentient dreaming or some such, and I just have this brief passage when I can recognise that this must be a dream, because I would not be walking around Harrods naked.
But if you can control again. That, you can harness it, can't you? There's a yeah, apparently there's the a thing, technique where you can suddenly take control.
And you realise you're in a dream.
Yeah.
But I've never been able to do that.
Julie, do you want to hang on for 3 minutes and come back after
sure.
the news, or have you...
No.
I just thought of two phrases that would be inappropriate. Said everything you wanted to say. No, you haven't. Good. So you hold on right there then. Okay, you're tuned to Talk Radio, whether you're listening live or podcasting this. If you're podcasting, strange experience, difficult for me to catch up with what you're doing because you'll know now whether Ian won it or not and stuff like that. But thank you for podcasting. Live, we're talking about Ian. He's, I think, second favourite... The boss of Talk Radio told me this evening, and my wife thinks he's going to win it. She keeps abreast of everything on social media. So we're talking about that. We're talking about sleep. And we're also wondering what's the best Christmas movie ever made. And also, what's the movie that you like to watch most often because it makes you cry?
Across the UK, online and on DAB. The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment. For those about to talk, we salute you.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Talking this evening about Israel and Jerusalem, if you wish. And sleep. And Christmas films. It used to be It's a Wonderful Life, didn't it? And it's not called White Christmas, is it? The one with Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye. It's called something like Holiday Inn. Those were the standard ones. But I think Love Actually is chasing them, along with Elf, I think, with Will Ferrell, is it? And, and Die Hard is a lot of people's favourite Christmas film, unbelievably. Because it is set at Christmas. Julie's on the line from Bromley. Hello, Julie.
Hello, Tommy.
Talking about sleep, you are.
I was talking about it. Lucid dreaming. That's the thing that you're supposed to do. Have you ever woken yourself up by laughing in a dream?
Yes, have you?
Yes.
You have?
But I couldn't remember what it was, but it was so funny.
Yes.
I couldn't remember. But I wanted to say about films that you watch deliberately to make you cry. Yeah. And the one that I watch is a musical. It's Carousel. Are you familiar with that film?
Walk on.
Yes.
Walk on.
Oh, my God.
That makes me cry when I hear the Liverpool fans doing that. I haven't seen the movie, though. Howard Keel, isn't it? Who?
Howard Keel,
What's Carousel about?
Carousel. It's about a girl who falls in love with somebody who works on the farm fair, and he dies, and it's about his daughter, and he is looking down from heaven.
Oh.
And polishing the stars. Oh.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's a film that I watched that...
And you enjoy having a sympathetic cry.
I quite enjoy crying full stop.
Do you?
Yeah. I find it cathartic.
Yes. Do you make noise when you cry or do you cry silently?
If there's noise, there's wailing, there's sobbing. And sometimes I might put records on. Records. Who says records anymore? I might put songs on my iPod that I know are going to make me cry. Just to get it out, if I need to get out some emotion.
It's interesting because before we came on air, I was chatting with Kath. She's just doing some producing business at the moment, so she's not with us. But I'll bring this up with her when she gets back in the studio, because she says that there are songs that she likes to listen to because they make her cry.
Yes. Yeah, I have a particular playlist of songs that make me cry.
Go on then, what?
Some of them don't even mean anything, but just the, I don't know, maybe the, I don't know, chord progression or something just makes me cry.
Yes, there are supposed to be sad chords, and apparently more modern songs are composed in sad chords than used to be the case, they're saying. So, come on, what's a song that makes you cry and you like it because it makes you cry?
It would be Fix You by Coldplay.
Okay.
Or it would be Mia Bambino Caro.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which makes me cry. There's quite a few songs that make me cry. Yeah, it's, I don't know if that's good or not. My husband doesn't get it.
But, no.
You know, I don't know if it's just a woman thing or not.
Does he ever cry?
I've been with him since I was 15. I'm 44 now. I've seen him cry once.
That must have been quite traumatic for both of you.
Do you ever cry, Sonny?
Yes, very much. I will cry, yeah. I cry when there's a movie on. My sons were littler than they are now, and they used to creep round the front of me just to check whether I was crying or not, and they would report to each other, yep, he's crying.
That's what my daughter does.
Really?
And I cry at cards in card shop if they've got nice words, even though the words are mass-produced.
Yes.
I'll cry at cards, film, most things.
Oh, I'll tell you what I cry at. On the marathon, when I watch the London Marathon and they're coming in over the line and they're playing that music. Da, 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 da. Then I
see, there's music that makes you kind of emote and, yeah, want to cry.
I was watching the television coverage one year and this chap got to the 10-mile mark and one of the BBC reporters ran alongside him and they said, where are you from? And he went, I'm from Hull. And blah, 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 blah. And then they said, is anybody watching? And he just went, yeah, my son Jack. I love you, Jack.
Ooh.
And I went, and I'm going now.
Yeah.
I know.
I'm going.
I cried at Kung Fu Panda 2. I cried everything.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, I saw an absolute beauty online the other day, and it was from an Irish television programme where they'd done that old trick of getting someone's serviceman dad back for the holidays.
Oh, my God.
So they open this big parcel and the dad's sitting there.
Oh.
And there's two little children. Oh, well, they're not just thinking about it.
Oh, my God.
And it was just the looks on their faces and the words, hello, daddy.
Oh.
Just got me. Hello, daddy. And then when it was all over, the audience were all applauding. Yeah. Everyone was going wild. And then you heard very quietly, Merry Christmas, daddy. Oh my God.
That is such a powerful word.
But you know what I didn't cry at? I did not cry at Titanic. That's the only thing that other people have cried at.
No.
That I haven't.
And I'll tell you why. And James Cameron admits this. He could have got on that bit of wood with her.
Of course he could.
And James Cameron says, yes, you're right. I would have done that differently if I'd thought. He spent $48 billion on that film. And he didn't work out that there was enough room on that bit of wood for two. I mean, you're not going to cry at a film that gets something like that as blatantly wrong as that, are you?
No.
And in any case, what are they doing letting Yossa Hughes drive the ship? Mind you, I'm dating myself there with Boys from the Black
Stuff.
Boys
from the Black Stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Fight back, Chrissy, why don't you fight back? Julie Walters. I'm trying to fight, woman. Give me a shotgun and I'll kill the geese. Great movie. TV series, though, wasn't it? Great TV series.
I never saw it.
Oh, right. So what did you think all those noises I was making had to do with
it? It's a reenactment.
I just know of Boys of the Black Stuff, I suppose.
And so here's the one that, you know, you say the word daddy. Daddy said by a child. It's so painful. Not painful, but tugging. There's a film called The Railway Tree.
Yes.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, my daddy.
No, oh, it goes God. Like this. He goes, my daddy.
Oh, yeah.
My daddy. Jenny Agutter. So that, and that, I literally make a noise when I see that.
Yeah.
And I cried once when I was watching a slow motion wildlife film of a cheetah running. And I have no idea why, but I'd noticed tears going down my cheeks.
Oh.
You see, I'm a proper man.
I cried listening to someone sing the other day. Because it was such a powerful voice.
Yeah. Whilst you were out doing producer business, Julie said that she cries at tunes. What was the song?
This is the ridiculous thing. It was a pantomime.
Yes.
And
it really was.
And it wasn't even an emotional song, but her voice was just so beautiful that I found myself crying.
Yes.
It was ridiculous. And do you know who it was? It was the other day. It was a couple of years ago. It was one of the women from Five Star.
Oh, God.
She was amazing.
Yeah.
School nativity plays.
Oh, I had one of those too.
Oh, God, yeah.
You cried?
Of course I did.
Did you cry, Julie, And yes. At what point? Silent Night. That's the one that always gets me. Yeah. If they sing Silent Night.
Lizzie World, David City.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the one that got me the other day.
Yes.
And all the angels sang for him. Do you know that one? The bells of heaven rang for him.
No, it's a new one, isn't it?
Oh, well, no, I remember singing it as a kid.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because my dad used to sing. It goes,
everything.
A boy was born everything. King of all the world.
And you name it.
My dad used to sing King of the Wild Frontier. So, yes, that song is it's quite an old one. But, yeah, do you know what's getting on my nerves at the moment, though, with adverts? Is that there's a trend now for slowing songs down, every song down, and singing it as if it's the last one you'll ever sing. They've done it with Ain't Nobody by Chaka Khan.
Which is awful.
And I heard one the other day, and I'm sorry to say this because it's for an excellent cause, but they've done one to the tune of Head, Shoulders, Knees and Toes.
Yeah. I know! I thought exactly the same, and it's a bit laughable.
And it's for Great Ormond Street, so...
It's supposed to be serious.
Yeah, it's for Great Ormond Street, so... But it's just awful.
Mm. It is awful.
How can you tell if a drummer is at your front door?
Don't know.
The knocking slows down. There's lots of drummer jokes out there based on the fact that that the band always looks down their nose at the drummer. And apparently most drummers do slow down.
Oh.
I didn't know that.
Oh.
So it's not much of a joke, really.
Unless you're a drummer.
A better joke was when an American journalist at one of those huge press conferences asked the Beatles, they went, is Ringo Starr the greatest drummer in the world?
Not true.
Yeah.
It's not true.
It's not true.
No, not even the greatest drummer in the Beatles.
It's not true.
No, it's a myth, an urban myth.
Urban myth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah, but when...
I love that.
Not even the best drummer in the Beatles is the line, isn't it?
Yeah, but like they say in The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, you know, print the myth.
Yeah.
How do you know it's not true?
Because it was a Jasper Carrot joke.
No, I won't have that. I won't have this.
It was.
I won't have this. I'm prepared to bet proper money that you're wrong here.
BBC.co.uk news magazine.
This is fake news. This is fake news.
The line often attributed to John Lennon, Ringo isn't the best drummer in the world, he isn't even the best drummer in the Beatles, was actually uttered by British comedian Jasper Carrot in 1983.
Oh.
No, I heard it way before
then. No, you didn't. What you're saying there is the Mandela effect. Have you heard of this?
Yeah.
Some people thought he was dead before he was dead because there is a theory that... they're time-travelling or something.
Do you believe in the Mandela effect, Boca?
I believe in misremembering things all the time.
That's misremembering rather than the Mandela
effect. I'm taken with thoughts about Nelson Mandela because I saw this documentary once and he was coming to a hotel in somewhere in South Africa, a big hotel, and they had kept it quiet so none of the staff knew that Nelson Mandela was coming. And when they finally found out, this cleaning lady became completely hysterical. And you got a clear impression of the impact that he'd had on the lives of ordinary South Africans. Because she sank to her knees and started sobbing and just saying his name over and over. No, Mandela, no. Oh, no. And it made me cry. So there's a lot of tears going on at the moment. I'm absolutely convinced that John Lennon said he's not even the best drummer in the Beatles.
Mm.
And there's another one. And again, this is not an urban myth. It was believed that Ringo was such a bad drummer that he gave the Beatles their unique sound, which was something to do with starting a bar. You know a bit more about music than I do.
The backbeat, they call it.
Yeah, okay, yeah, go on.
So instead of being on the beat, you're slightly, you slightly lag behind.
Yes, and this is true, or is it an urban myth, that is the reason for the Beatles' distinctive sound, because Ringo was such an indifferent drummer.
I don't think he was a bad drummer. I think that's just become the joke, hasn't it?
Well, he got very lucky, didn't he? Because they were in between drummers.
I tell you who's the most lucky man in rock music.
Yeah.
Mick Fleetwood.
Because
he's just all right compared to the rest, isn't he?
The unluckiest people in show business, in music, I've said this before, and I do wonder about this chap. When Simon Cowell decided to take these five young singers and turned them into a boy band, because they all turned up to audition as solo singers, there would have been one lad who almost made it but didn't quite, and he doesn't know it.
Oh.
And he's doing whatever, stacking shelves or driving a mini car or something, a mini cab or something. And he doesn't know that he came within a millimetre of being a billionaire and a heartthrob and all of that, you know, and being best mates with Harry Styles. He doesn't know it.
Secret Pete Best.
Secret Pete Best, that's it. Julie, thank you for your call. It's been a delight talking to you. Talk to you again sometime.
You know, Pete Best's going to be in a Beatles musical in Liverpool, playing himself.
The Pete Best. Yeah. You know, Johnny Holiday died.
Yeah, Johnny Hallyday.
Johnny Hallyday. It was the first time in my life I remember feeling superior to the French when, at the age of about 9 or 10, I discovered that they had their own Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
And it was, and I thought, this guy's got to be something. And it was Johnny Holiday, and he looked sub Cliff Richard to me.
He did.
So I felt really proud of that, and I thought, the French can't do rock music.
Yeah, when I went to stay over there, Amy was very old, and he carried on, didn't he, with his leather trousers and his operated on face.
But, you know, Jacques Brel, yes. Beautiful. Johnny Holiday. Serge Gainsbourg, yes. But Johnny Holiday? So, what is the reason why the French can't do rock, then?
I think it's to do with the language.
Okay, it's not a rock and roll language.
No, it's not rhythmic enough. It's not hard enough.
Glottal.
So they're good at ballads. If you notice a lot of French songs, they'll add an extra E on the end of things just to make it rhyme.
Really?
Yes. Like, you know, My Way was written in French first.
I did not know.
Yeah, Comme d'habitude, it's called.
No, but Paul Anka wrote it.
No. I don't think he did.
I'm getting so many myths exploded by this person.
Or maybe he did, but I've certainly heard it in French. Let me check.
Okay, that's fine.
But to make it fit in, I did it my way. They say, comme d'habitude. Comme d'habitude, the phrase would be. They do that all the time.
Well, we have the pub singer's variation on that, which is, and now. And now. And now. The end is clear, and so I face... The reason I can do the words is not as sad as you think. The final curtain. Is that what we're talking about?
Yes.
It was because when I worked as the Butlin's Red Coat, I used to have to do the talent night. And one night, a bloke got up, and he came up to the stage, the Pig and Whistle Bar. 2,000 people, it's huge. And I just had an organist and a drummer behind me in case they wanted to sing something. This bloke came up and I said, what would you like to do? Oh, I'd like to sing. I said, excellent. What would you like to sing? I'd like to sing My Way. That evening, 14 acts came up and 13 of them were men wanting to sing My Way.
Wow.
Yep. And they sang it like they meant it as well. Because all the things that had gone wrong in their lives, you know, mucking up the family holiday and getting fired just before Christmas 3 years ago. And they'd done it their way.
Toxic masculinity, right?
Yes.
It's their way of venting a little bit, yes. I think, My Way. My Way is a kind of... And I was right all along.
Yes.
And I don't regret anything.
Yes. A lot of men fire arrows into the fence and then go out and paint targets around them and go, yes!
I did it. Comme d'habitude. Okay?
Comme d'habitude, go on.
Claude François, Jacques Ruveau, with lyrics by Claude François and Gilles Thibault, originally recorded by Hervé Villard, was Paul Anka, after hearing the song while watching French television in Paris, bought the song's publication and adaptation rights, but the original songwriters retained the music composition, half of their songwriter royalties. So he wrote the English lyrics specifically for Frank Sinatra. He pinched it. Legally.
I like the fact that you're 3-0 up.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I really do.
It's just I remember these things because it's... I like being surprised by life.
So John Lennon never said he's not even the best drummer in the Beatles.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what the other one was, something to do with the Beatles.
The backbeat.
The backbeat. And your hat trick is that Paul Anka nicked My Way.
Yeah. From
but
the French.
Didn't get on the back of a beer mat, that did it. What got on the back of a beer mat was that Paul Anka wrote it.
Yeah.
Right, she's in the lead, and I think that's good. That's a healthy thing. We're talking sleep, we're talking crying, Christmas films and songs. Israel and Jerusalem are there if you are driven by the news agenda of the day. That's all fine. Remind us of our phone number, Kath, and then we'll take a break and rush to Tony, who's our next caller.
The phone number is 0344 499 1000.
across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
It's Tommy Boyd in for Ian Lee, who might be thrown out of the celebrity jungle tomorrow. But the clever money is that he won't be and that he stands a pretty good chance of winning it. So you're stuck with me tomorrow night as well. But I look forward to your contributions. Kath is here and Sam is here. We're talking about sleep and dreams and Christmas films that we cry at and love and music that also makes us cry. And the news agenda is, of course, there always for your perceptive comments on if that's what you'd like to do. You can either tweet or text or call us. We've been getting some tweets and I haven't been reading them out because they haven't been appearing on my screen, Kath. So if you get a tweet that's worth...
Yeah, I've had a few talking okay. about sad films and et cetera. Let's see. I had one here from... here we go. Of course, it's shifted. This is from Alistair. He suggested films that get in every time. Was Whistle Down the Wind.
Mm-hmm.
With Hayley Mills.
Hayley Mills. That's where they think that the tramp is Jesus.
Yeah, he's an escaped convict, isn't he? He's hiding in the barn.
Yeah.
And all the kids think that Jesus has come back.
Yes.
Because they've all been to Sunday school.
Yes.
Isn't it Easter he's found as well? Jesus has come back.
I have a theory that if Jesus does come back, he'll come back in lots of different guises at once.
Oh, do you think?
I do. I think the idea, there's so many of us now, you know, the proportion, the ratio of Jesus to human beings 2,000 years ago was probably about 1 per 8 million.
Mm.
I don't know how many people were alive 2,000 years ago.
Fewer than there are now, I guess.
Fewer. And so since there are, let's say, 100 times more people here, then if God works on that kind of ratio of 1 to 8 million, there'll be about 200 Jesuses.
No.
No?
You're forgetting something.
Yes.
There is YouTube.
Well, yeah, but you can't...
He'll be a YouTuber.
But laying of hands, it's a personal thing, isn't it? Yeah. How are you going to touch the hem of somebody's raiment on YouTube?
Mm.
We've got Tony on the line. Roy, stay where you are. I know you want to talk to us about My Way, but Tony's just got ahead of you on the queue, so we'll rush to Tony, who has comments about Ian. Hi, Tony.
Hello. Sorry, I just need to chuckle there, because you did say rush to Tony. And I've been on hold for 27 minutes.
I know, we're a bit busy tonight. I do apologise.
No, it's funny. No, I'm only joking. The reason I'm calling, Kath, hello, yeah,
hello.
How are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
I don't know, I'm Tonic Girl.
Right, okay.
Twitter. So, I every time I feel something for Ian, I just think about you and think how must you be feeling? So how are you?
I'm all right, because I think he's rallied and I think he's seen through the game now that the actually, ironically enough, the people accusing him are playing. So I think he's realised what's going on with them. And the conversation, the goading this early on in the sort of the latest show was something that he resisted. And I'm glad he did, because I think he realises they're making themselves look like plums.
Did you see the smile tonight?
Yep. I've seen a few.
Yeah.
And they're the moments when you know that he's rallying.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so proud of him. I've listened to the show for a few years, and when you see these comments on Twitter, these throwaway comments.
Yeah, but they're by people that don't know him, Tony. And it's a game to them, you know. Don't rise. Have a look at how many followers they've got. Have a look at how many of those people are real. If they've not got a photo or a real name, ignore them. They're just stirring.
Yeah, you're right.
Don't rise.
Anyway, I just wanted to say to you, I'm thinking of you every time. You must be so proud of him.
Yeah.
I voted for him to stay in the other night, and I almost felt bad doing that.
Yeah, I've spoken to his wife, I've spoken to his sister, and we all agreed that we're all going to vote for him. And potentially not tell him that we had, but we thought he could do it, you know, we thought he could do it. And actually, I think that he's doing him the power of good, realising that he's being kept in there on purpose. I think at first he thought, well, he said that he thought it was a fluke, didn't he?
Well, I suffer with depression myself, and seeing, and I'm one of these people like Ian, where, you know, where the mean girls have talked about, oh, he's all up one minute and down the next and blah-de-blah, and they don't understand.
No.
And obviously that is the way of depression.
Yeah.
And I'm so proud that he's kept on and he's still there. And it must be so hard for him. Those sitting around the campfire, all that, like you said, small talk that he hates. Honestly, I can imagine it must be awful. But anyway, he's there and he's doing it. And it's I think he's doing so brilliantly. And,
okay, Tony, thank you for your call. I do appreciate all your good words, wise words, and your support for Ian. And your kind thoughts about Kath as well are very much appreciated. So thank you for that. The sensation of falling when you're half asleep and jerking yourself awake is called a hypnic jerk.
Sounds like a dance move.
Indeed the sort of person who sounds like a hypnic jerk. Hypnic jerks. There's words for everything, isn't there?
Yeah. So what's is that to do with? Is that related to hypnotic or is it? What's that?
We've been talking about sleep, and we're talking about sleep. Kath is known as she who never sleeps, although she does get some sleep, but it's kind of disjointed. And she's going to go for 12 hours. You're aiming for 12 hours, aren't you, tomorrow?
Well, if I can, yeah.
You're going to try and do it, which will be good, yes. My 34-hour sleep, or whatever it was, came about when I was given the opportunity, working in America, to sleep in the pillow store. So I slept on a pile of pillows 6 feet high that filled an entire shed, not more than a shed, it was a warehouse almost. And what a night's sleep that was. But the thing was, when I woke up, my watch said 7:30, and I assumed it was 7:30 a.m. And I got outside and I wondered why the guys were having burgers for breakfast and beer. What a great idea! Bud and burger for breakfast. Then it started to get dark, and I thought, storm coming. It gradually dawned on me that I'd slept for 34 hours, which was fantastic. We're talking about songs that make you cry. We got onto that because we'd been talking about Christmas films and why we like ones which make us feel emotional and cry. But we've also found ourselves talking about the Frank Sinatra hit, which I think was in the charts longer than any other song, My Way. And that's why Roy's called.
Hi there.
Hey, Roy.
All right there. What I'd ring in is David Bowie was asked to write the lyrics to the song My Way, and as Kathy said, it was originally the French song, was it? Comme d'habitude or something?
Comme d'habitude, yeah, as usual it sort of means.
Comme d'habitude, and at the time, apparently Bowie was he was on Parkinson, and he explained it about 2002, that before he was famous and he was just looking for his next job, he was asked by a music publisher if he could write some English lyrics to the song, that French song, Comme d'habitude, and which is music is the song that we know as My Way. And he wrote a song, the English lyrics, not a translation, but his own lyrics, called Even a Fool Learns to Love. And he submitted them in to the music publisher. And then apparently a few months later, he heard on the radio this big hit, My Way, which is a song we all know. And as Kathy said, written by Paul Anka. And he said, you know, why didn't you use my lyrics? And he said that, and he was told they were rubbish. And
lot of song lyrics do look rubbish when they're written down. It's only when you've got the music wrapping around them that they sound poetic. I was listening to somebody saying earlier today that Elton John wrote It's a little bit funny. What's that one? Your song or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This feeling inside. He wrote it. It took him 20 minutes sitting at his mum's kitchen table in a flat in Watford or wherever.
Wasn't that... Was he writing the music and what was it? The other guy wrote the lyrics.
Bernie Taupin. Yeah, I don't know whether Taupin had sent him the lyrics and so Elton had to go... Diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle. I don't know, yeah. How do songwriters do it? I've always wondered this, that they've obviously got different techniques. If you write the words, then that really rather dictates, you know, where the notes have to go.
So I saw a South Bank show with Elton John, yeah. And he wrote a song in it, and it only took him about 20 minutes.
He's supposed to be pretty quick. He wrote The Lion King. What was that song, the theme tune for
Circle
The Lion
of Life.
King? Circle of Life. Apparently he wrote that in the back... of a taxi, I should imagine it's more of a limo, on his way to the recording studio to record it. So according to his legend, he got in the car and didn't have a song. And when he arrived at the recording studio, he had that one.
I find the process really fascinating that some songwriters will say that they work at it and they work at it and they work at it and they make sure they sit down for a certain number of hours every day and they don't allow themselves to move. Others just seem to regurgitate, don't they? All of a sudden it arrives and they spit it out on the page.
Yeah.
I know Brian Wilson hears the music in his head and writes it down.
Right.
Isn't that amazing? He can hear the whole arrangement in his head.
Fantastic.
Well, I'm not sure he does anymore.
You see that?
Isn't it Paul McCartney who said he woke up with the song Yesterday or something in his head or something like that? Wasn't that? And he just, you know, it's almost like it came to him in a dream or something.
Yeah, wasn't Yesterday... oh, no, Sergeant Pepper, wasn't it? Was prompted by looking at the crew it's set on a flight.
Really?
Mm. But wasn't it Eggs Today or something? He was thinking about it. Let me find out.
He wrote... he allegedly had the tune for Michelle... And he had and he was looking for an English girl's name that then rhymed with something else. But he said there are no English girls' names that rhyme with anything nice. So he had to resort to Michelle Marbelle. That's the story.
Scrambled eggs. That was yesterday. Scrambled eggs is what came into his head.
Was it?
Mm-hmm. Isn't that amazing?
I'm just riding through the fact that you haven't. Myth busted my story
don't
about...
Don't you think that's true?
Well, I'm getting worried about whether any of the things that I believe are true are true once you apply your fine mind to them, Boyle. Roy, thank you very much indeed for your call. Nice
one. Thank you.
Yeah, talk to you again. We are talking about music that makes us cry and why we like crying and sleep. And the sleep conversation was kicked off by the fact that I've noticed an interesting little phenomenon. I don't know how long I've had it, but I'm quite amnesiacal for the first 90 seconds after I wake up. Because the other day I woke up, the radio was on, somebody was talking about athletics, and I thought to myself, oh, it's a great shame we'll never see that Jamaican sprinter, what was his name again? And I was astonished that I couldn't remember his name. I knew him. And it must be what early stage dementia is actually like. And there I was experiencing it. But it's happened to me several times. And I know that it always goes away after as soon as I've had my first sip of my first morning cup of tea. It's gone. About 90 seconds. So we're talking about sleep. And I've got in front of me... Andre, stay where you are. I'll be with you in just a second. I've got in front of me some information about the ideal position to sleep in. And what it tells you about yourself, the positions that you sleep in. What position do you believe you sleep in most of the time, Kath?
Recovery position, the old-fashioned one. Face down.
OK, and Sam? What position do you, if you are aware, what position do you sleep most of the time in?
Like on the side, hugging my pillow.
Which side? Is it a general, same side?
Either. I put my pillows on either side of the bed, so I'll roll over one way, hug that pillow. Then when I roll over in the night, I'll then hug the other pillow.
Okay, so you dress your bed with pillows in order to...
Well, I don't put my head on a pillow. I put my head straight on the mattress. And just...
Do you have nothing under your head?
No, I can't stand it. I don't like my neck being a slight... It just feels wrong to me.
Gosh, that is interesting. So I can understand that on your back, but on your side, that must be... I'd thought that was really uncomfortable. But you have two pillows in your bed and you use them to encourage you to sleep a certain way?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, thanks, Sam, for that. A bit weird, isn't it?
He's totally weird.
A little bit weird. Not weird, but unusual. I'm just trying to look for some information about sleep positions and what it tells you about you. Here we are, sleep positions. So, right. Okay, there are six positions in which you can sleep. Of those six positions, the rarest is called free-faller, which is just 6.5% of us prefer sleeping on your front. And people who sleep on their front tend to have a brash and gregarious exterior. Now, the soldier position is where you sleep on your back. And people who sleep on their back tend to be quiet and reserved, setting high standards for themselves. Is that you?
No, this sounds like bullshine, though, doesn't it?
No, because it's attached to a professor. No.
Professor what? Yaffle?
Yeah, I've had so many important theories punctured by Kath Boyle this evening on the show that I'm starting to feel a little bit vulnerable, really, a little bit sort of not Ian Lee vulnerable, but no, not in the jungle vulnerable, but no. Just a little bit kind of tentative about putting things forward. People who sleep on their side are called logs. And then there's also a yearner who is sleeping in the log position but with raised arms, and they tend to be suspicious and cynical. Is that you?
How?
You're sleeping in the log position on your side but with your arms up. Yeah, you see, we have the central heating off at night, and unless I'm wearing pyjamas, which have long sleeves, the nip in the air will wake me up if my arms come out of the duvet. Because sometimes I sleep in a T-shirt, or not at all. And then I wake up in the middle of the night because it's a bit nippy. So obviously we move a lot in the night, don't we? I believe that the average is between 11 and 35 times we move in the night, just changing position. The one thing that the professor refuses to answer is the age-old question, how much sleep do I need? Because I suppose the answer for most of us is just a little bit more, isn't it? Andre calls. And Andre, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll talk to you right after one or two important announcements. Do pay attention.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Let's talk to Andre, who's in Essex. Andre, welcome to Talk Radio.
Hello, sir. Sorry.
Who would you like it to be?
Curvaceous cat. Oh, no, I don't mind who it is. But what I was going to say, I heard a couple of your subjects there. One on Frank Sinatra and the other one on sleeping, yeah?
Yeah.
What do you want to hear about first?
Oh, you choose.
Sleeping, right? Sleeping. I always sleep. Now, you didn't mention this in your, like, positions, but I always sleep the other way around with the head ball by my feet. What does that mean?
Well, are you alone?
And the pillow's at the other end. No, I prefer it's different.
No, but are you alone?
Am I low?
Yes, are you low? I would ask that, wouldn't I? Are you low?
I'm about 18 inches off the ground, actually, because my bed's quite high.
Yes.
And it's a memory foam mattress. It's yes. Nice.
Yes, about the burglar who hid under the bed because he was told to...
Alone or low?
Lie low for a while. Sawed the legs off his bed. Burglar.
No, it's just... it feels like I'm in a different bed. Sometimes I sleep up the other way, but then if I want to feel like I'm in another bed, I'll sleep the other way around.
I was lying in bed and I heard a noise downstairs.
Yeah.
And it was... And I said to the wife, I said, you phone the police. I'm going downstairs with a poker. I think we've got buglers. I wrote that one. And I sold it. It's one of the four jokes I've sold. I sold that one. Who just sell it?
Did you blow your own trumpet there? Right,
it's quite good, quite good.
On Frank Sinatra, yeah?
Yeah.
Now, My Way is a very good song, I must admit. Better done by Sid Vicious.
Why is there a need to admit that?
Oh, no, I was far to get that in there.
Well, but I must admit, to be honest, that's another one.
Cass might agree. Mac the Knife is even better.
Well, when there was all this stuff about knife crime, I put it to the publishers that they should change that lyric.
No, it's only a song.
Yes.
It's a song, isn't it? It's like a film.
It's glorifying the business of knives. So I suggested that they rush out a new version, and it's Mac the Spoon.
Oh, Mac the Spoon. No, but look, that, you know,
nobody's ever, nobody has ever suffered even an accidental injury.
Oh, I can't even get a word in here. Yeah, look, you're as bad as Ian, like when I'm trying to talk.
And you're as bad as Andre.
Right now, when that shark bites with those teeth, dear, scarlet billows, they start to spray.
Go on, all the way.
Fancy gloves, dear, as McHeath's, yeah. So there's never, never, never a trace of red.
All the way through to the chorus.
Oh, one morning, a tugboat going by, the cement bay is just full of weight. And that's a hit for me, I think. Is that enough?
You didn't even get to Mac the Spoon, did you, really?
No, I didn't.
Listen, Andre, I've got to let you go. Thank you for your call. Next time, turn your radio off or something, I don't know. He was trying to catch himself down, wasn't he? Because listening to himself with a slight delay. I was watching a person in the supermarket a couple of days ago having to do an announcement. And if you haven't done an announcement on speakers before, you start to slow down because... And she did. She went, "Would Mr. Bacon please come to the till area?" We all do it. I did it myself.
Because you could hear yourself.
First time I opened a fate and the speakers were all there. I opened a really sad fate. I got there. It was in Gloucestershire. And they said, "We've had a bit of a terrible thing happen. When you open the fate, could you not mention the deaths?" And I said, "What happened?" Now, this was just after I'd done my stint in BBC local radio, which is how everybody used to start back then. And one of the things that I used to do was take out the radio car. Way.
I've done that. It's great.
Take the radio car out. And one of the things that you're taught is to be very careful about where you put the aerial up.
Yeah.
It's got a hydraulic mast and it's got a separate key and you click and up it goes.
People get very annoyed if you do it in the morning.
Well, here's the thing, and this is truly tragic. Two people from BBC, whatever it is, Radio Bristol or something like that, turned up at this fete to cover it.
Oh, no.
And it was held in the most enormous palatial gardens grounds, empty space for miles around. They could have picked anywhere. They put their car underneath a single 30,000-volt cable. Bang. And there's several things. I mean, that is awful and tragic, and it's well documented, and my heart always goes out to the family and friends and colleagues of these two people died. I suspect one of them was a young anorak cable basher, like everybody in broadcasting used to have to have done before they got into it, and a broadcaster. And I know that if I'd been there half an hour earlier and I'd seen a radio car, I would have been over there talking shop with them, because you do. You go over and you say, what's the old wavelength? Are you on the 97.4 kilohertz or, you know, that? And I'd have been stood there. But here's the other thing. The army were doing a display at this fete. And, you know, people sometimes knock the army. I've been known to say myself that it's a silly idea, but on the whole, we need our armed forces. And nobody knew what to do because the car, aerial, had gone up and was still touching this 30,000-volt cable. And it was alive. And nobody knew what to do. Except the army. Suddenly, the guy with stripes on his sleeve just went, "Right! You, you and you! That rope there! there, come here, there. And they threw the rope up against the mast. And then they went round the one side of it and pulled so that the mast separated its contact from the cable. And then there were the rest of the soldiers. You and you, push the car! And pushed the car clear of it. But it wasn't in time to save the men. Anyway, the organiser said to me, would I open the fete, but please not mention anything negative at all. You know, and there was a patch of burnt, huge patch of burnt grass right in the middle of where the army were going to do their marching and their brass band and everything. Sorry, loudspeakers. Got that from loudspeakers. Isn't conversation a morpher sometime? Sometimes. In my hands, anyway. This evening, Tommy in for Ian Lee, who is storming it, and I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. And it looks as though he's going to be still in the jungle tomorrow, so I'll finish any of the stories I haven't managed to finish this evening, tomorrow night. Kath will be in bed still, because she's got a night off, and she's her plan is to sleep for at least 12 hours. This evening we're talking about things that make us cry over Christmas and why we enjoy that type of crying, as in Christmas films and songs. We're also talking about sleep, because it's in everybody's mind, I think. And if you want to talk about the news agenda, then we're Talk Radio. And so, of course, we're very happy to let you do that. Reminder of our contact details again, Kath.
0344 499 1000.
Thank you. Alan's on the line, Alan Caddick.
Evening, Tommy.
Evening, Alan.
Evening, Kath.
Hiya.
So Ian survives on number 9 in the jungle.
Of course he does. They're handing him the final the way they're carrying on.
Who's gone tonight?
Dennis Wise.
Oh, little Dennis Wise is a little man.
He's 5'6". How tall are you?
5'8".
Well,
you're not exactly...
glass houses.
You know, they're not lining you up for the NBA, are they?
I saw you on the Daily Mirror again, Kath.
Yeah, they can't get enough.
And when we are with Ian Lee T-shirts as well.
Yes, of course.
So, I've ordered mine.
Have you?
Yeah. But it started snowing in Birmingham.
Oh.
Is it?
Yeah, it's just started.
Really? How wonderful. How magical. Everywhere looks just that much better under snow, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, Christmas is definitely here, even though the snow's early. It should be here on the 25th.
It would be nice to have a white Christmas, wouldn't it? You're too young to
remember.
No, you're too young to remember the last one. And it was fantastic because it was a foot of snow, and it fell on Christmas Day. So we knew what to do with Boxing Day. Alan, thank you for your call. It's always nice to talk to you, and to touch base with your thoughts about important issues, including Ian Lee. I nearly got stranded in Bristol one Christmas because it snowed in the run-up to Christmas, and it looked as though we might never get home. We were working in Bristol, and I lived in London, and I suddenly realised that I might have to rent a cottage or something.
Oh.
And be snowed in for Christmas with my colleagues, many of whom I liked very much indeed. No, not like that.
No, I don't think you. I didn't
but
think
it was
that way.
Just such a lovely romantic idea to be snowbound.
It's the stuff of sitcoms, isn't it? That
this would have been a romantic comedy.
Oh, I was right first time then.
Yes. So we're talking about sleeping, and various positions that you can be in to sleep. There's another report out that suggests that the more you earn, the better you sleep. People who earn between 68,000 and 70,000, which is considered a lot of money, and it is, tend to sleep better than people who earn significantly less than that. How much sleep do most Brits get? What do you think is the rough amount of time that the majority of us sleep for? This is of all ages, right across the board.
Isn't 8 the standard?
8! You always think of 8, don't you?
Mm.
I think of 8. I always feel as though I'm cheating my body if I haven't had 8 hours sleep, but I can't remember the last time I had 8 hours sleep. It's not going to happen. It's actually 5 to 6 hours sleep. Gosh. 5.5 hours
Gosh,
sleep.
That doesn't feel enough, does it?
Now, when they reported that Margaret Thatcher only had 5 and a bit hours yeah. sleep, everybody went, oh, my God, that's why she's mad.
Yeah, they thought well, she's a machine.
Yeah. How can she do that? What does she do? Go, not go to sleep until 2 o'clock in the morning or wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning? But it turns out it's, you know, pretty damn normal. Maybe we are sleeping less because of artificial light, Wi-Fi.
Oh, reading your phone in bed.
Caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
And worrying.
Tellies in bedrooms.
Tellies in bedrooms. And worrying. Our phone number again?
0344 499 1000.
This is Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment. For those about to talk, we salute you.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
So, today is the 8th of December now?
Yes, I guess.
The 8th of December.
Let me check. Yeah, 8th. Friday.
Friday.
Mm-hmm.
The 8th of December, the only Friday, the 8th of December 2017, there will ever be. So we have to seize the day and make something happen that will help us remember the 8th of December 2017 if we are called upon to account for our actions when we finally go up to the pearly gates. Correct? Is that you?
Yes.
Excellent. What I'm going to do is, can you get the spare microphone onto Kath's tum? If she doesn't mind.
I don't think it will reach.
I've only ever once been involved in listening.
I don't think I'll reach.
For somebody's tummy rumbling. Do you have to move to make it rumble?
I'll feel it coming and I'll stand up.
If you're listening on an indifferent radio, if you're listening on your headphones and podcasting this, you will have heard. Just a little creaking. Does your stomach rumble much?
Yes.
Okay. Is it because you drink too much green tea or because you
possibly.
Work with Ian Lee?
Possibly too much green tea.
Both those things.
And I've been eating earlier because I found that I was starting to eat later and later at night and it's no good for you.
No. So you haven't eaten now for how long?
Probably since, probably about 5 o'clock.
So what is a tummy rumbling then? Why does it happen?
Isn't it your acids getting to work?
But what is the noise? Because my tummy rumbles. Everyone's tummy rumbles. Sam, your tummy rumbles.
Of course it does.
Yeah. And it produces alcohol as well. Did you know that your digestive system produces alcohol? It's like a massive Guinness still down there. All 30 feet of it. If your stomach starts to rumble, could you just sort of pull my tummy's rumbling face and we'll try and get it?
I'll stand up and do this.
She's now standing up and putting her abdomen against the...
against the microphone.
Microphone. So, we may all go to heaven, or at least go to the pearly gates, where it will be decided whether or not we go to heaven. And if we do, it would be good if we can point to some things in our lives that worked quite well. And... one good way of doing that, carpe diem, is to always be doing something or aiming to do something in the course of a typical day. That's a good thing. Maybe ring somebody that haven't spoken to for a long time, or try and reconcile with somebody that you've had a tiff with, or just knock on your next door neighbour's door because you know that she has to do her own shopping and, you know, things like that.
Put their bin back after the bin men have been.
Oh, yeah. Do you do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he does it for me.
Yeah, I don't like it being done for me.
Well, no, it suggests that you've left it out too long.
No, in my case, it suggests that I can't trundle an empty wheelie bin back.
Oh, right. Are they younger than you?
Only a few years, but it counts. The other thing is I like putting the wheelie bin back because it makes the same noise as the drum roll at the beginning.
Yes, it does.
At the beginning of Sunday night at the London Palladium. You're too young to remember that.
No, I do remember it.
The Sunday night the London Palladium had a very curious theme tune. Bruce Forsyth used to host first. And it used to go... da 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 da. And it was a very sad programme to watch because it meant you had school in the morning.
Yeah.
But Bruce Forsyth made it. But it always used to start with this very long kettle drum roll.
Live from the London Palladium.
Go on, go on.
Was that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome your host, Bruce Forsyth.
Da, da.
This great so swell.
What happens is whenever I'm bringing the wheelie bin in and it's making that trundling noise, I find myself going, da, 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 da. You do.
Yes.
It's the way the mind works.
Yeah.
It's all by association. That's why the internet is very much like your own mind. And it's hardly surprising there because it's the human mind that created it. So you Google something and you get a Wikipedia about it. And instead of finishing and going off it, you see something else on the Wikipedia page and it's got blue on it. That means you can click through. So you do. So you click through. So you're watching the Maltese Falcon and it says Maltese Falcon, Humphrey Bogart, you know, and John Huston. So you click on John Huston, and that's the way the mind works, by association. But the question is, what are you going to do today? You're just going to sleep.
Me? No, well, I've got a family member's 60th birthday, so we're going to go and celebrate life.
So it's good. Oh, wow. What are you going to do?
She's fantastic as well. She looks about 50. No children, unmarried.
Ah.
And she's very young at heart. She's wonderful. And so I'm going
to... We heard that one.
I'm going to go with...
If it suddenly goes quiet, it's because...
I'm standing up.
...is showing off her rumbling tummy. That was a little mini belch,
it? Was
it?
A little...
But thank you. Well done. Good.
I'm going to take the... We're going with the girls, so my little girls. And I love those parties where I know for a fact that me and the girls will be the first ones on the dance floor.
Yeah.
I'm probably the first ones to leave as well, because bedtime comes quite early.
Yeah. What are you dancing to at the moment?
Well, anything. The girls at the moment like Little Mix.
No.
No?
Sorry.
They were also very into Despacito.
I think I...
During the holidays.
Yes.
But that seems to have died a death.
What's your absolute standard, the one that you will rush gleefully onto the dance floor for?
Oh.
And people do, well, mainly women, people do write, they go, ah! And they've got to dance to this one.
If they ever put Baccarat's Yes Sir, I Can Boogie.
Okay.
There's no denying that one.
Okay. I Will Survive?
No.
Just asking.
And I don't like girls just want to have fun either. All those handbag hits, I don't like.
Handbag hits. Do people still put their handbags in a little pile?
Yeah, sometimes you've got to. You can't leave it behind, can you? What do you do?
Yeah, fair enough.
We do it tongue in cheek now, but I mean, you still have to do it.
Okay. All right. And what about slow dancing? What's the absolute standard classic, the real, the one that you must?
I don't know.
Dance
I don't
and snog, I... snog by.
I don't know that I've done that for years.
Haven't snogged on the dance floor for years.
I've had kids for a while; they're always there.
I know.
They ruin
you don't,
it.
You don't
they?
Snog as much as you did, do you? No. We sort of kissed in public. We had a cup of coffee at the other half of me. A couple of days ago, and I said, I'll give us a kiss like that. And we just pecked.
Yes.
We did a peck. So I said, no, a bit longer. So how long was it for? It was... So that's
right.
Hardly a...
But it was still a peck. You weren't...
Hardlier.
You weren't...
They used to have kissing competitions in America, didn't they? And I guess they did here as well. People would just have to hold a kiss for... to
wasn't
win money.
Really, wasn't really kissing there, was it?
It was just depression, kind of just holding lips.
Circular
together.
Breathing.
Yes. So what is your favourite slow song then for snogging? Dancing.
I don't
close
know.
Dancing.
I don't know. I haven't, as I say, I haven't done it for such a long time.
Yeah. I was DJing once at a nightclub in Brighton and this bloke
did
came up.
Did you call it the erection section?
No, I did not.
They do.
Do they?
Mm.
The erection section.
Yes.
Well, there's something else that rhymes with station that I suppose could be equally unfortunate. So this bloke came up to me and people were bopping. They were dancing, right? This is the big nightclub in Brighton, the King's Club, and everybody's bopping. And I was getting paid £10 for the gig, which is all right. This bloke came up to me and he flashed a fiver and he went, "Oh, mate, you play Feelings by Marisol Bob." So I looked at the fiver.
He's bribing you.
It was the wrong moment, though, because everybody was, you know, moving fast. And I'd got them all up on the dance floor, and that's the art of it. Get everybody on the dance floor, dancing away. You know, I was a Spirit in the Sky or something like that, you know, standard one. Norman Greenbaum. And so I took the fiver and I went, all like that. So the next riff was feelings.
Oh, no.
Nothing more than feelings. Everybody looked at me as if I was a... which I was a bit of a. And a couple of couples slow danced, but he did, this guy. And he was obviously on a date, slightly incongruous, because he was about 5 foot wide, big shoulders, mm-hmm. small. Bob Hoskins.
Right, I got you.
Okay, and she was more Rula Lenska.
Okay.
You with me?
He was punching then, wasn't he?
Nothing more than feelings. Anyway, so I went back to the fast music after that, put on something else as well, you know, and everybody's up it and at it again. 10 minutes later, guess what? There he is again.
No.
Yeah. But he didn't have another fiver. He just eyeballed me and he went, "You play feelings again." Now, what do you do now? What would you have done? He's a big lad. I think he was Brighton Mafia, and there is a mafia in Brighton.
Mm.
I can tell you that. I think he was Brighton Mafia. And I had taken a fiver off him, and all I'd done was play feelings.
You once. Played it again, didn't
of course
you?
I did. I think I managed to get away with playing it no more than three times. And I also worked in the strangest nightclub in Brighton, which was where it was owned by a man who bought the nightclub and kitted it out to a tune of £50,000 because he'd made too much money in his business and his accountant had told him to lose some.
Ah, right, okay.
And he hired me as his DJ. But here's the thing, right, he didn't want any customers. So we had a massive restaurant, a huge bar area, fantastic dance floor with all the lights and everything, and I had a booth that was high up and latest state-of-the-art equipment, and nobody there.
Gosh.
Occasionally one of his mates would drop in for a drink. And I got paid well and free beers.
I've been to places like that. I just thought that they were rubbish, but obviously they were...
No.
That's not money laundering, is it? Is that what it's called?
Ah, but here's the thing. He's one of... Yes. I don't know. Is it legal or illegal? It's the same... plot line as the producers.
The producers, yeah.
But this worked for this guy as well. This guy was one of those people who had the Midas touch, right? And eventually got bored with going every night to his own nightclub because he would come up to me and ask me to play the song that was special to him and his girlfriend, which is Blanket on the Ground.
Oh, my.
So I'd sometimes end up playing every other song and earning, you know, 10 quid, which when you're a student is pretty good dough, because I was doing 4 or 5 nights a week, just sitting there by myself, drinking his beer and playing Blanket on the Ground. Then he got bored with going, so he installed a manager, and the manager opened it up to the public, and it absolutely rocked. And the queues went down the block. It was the best nightclub in Brighton from nowhere. And now what? Now he's making money.
Which is not the object of the exercise.
No! He's making money out of the thing that he was supposed to be losing money. Now, if you or I, well, I certainly opened a nightclub, it would bomb. It would die. It wouldn't work because I don't have that Midas touch.
No.
But this fella did. Julian's our next caller in Reading.
Hello, Tommy.
Oh, hello, Julian.
Hey, I DJ sometimes, funny enough.
Right.
In the minute it's in a hotel and they've got like an over 25s nightclub.
Okay.
But over 25 can mean over 35, over 45.
Yes, that is very
maybe
much the
55.
Concept of over 25.
Yeah,
in a nutshell.
Yeah, and I wouldn't really play a slow dance very often because it clears the dance floor, generally.
Well, you're supposed to play a slow dance, though, every so often, so that men and women can get off, basically.
Yeah, but it's not like that anymore. That doesn't really...
No, I know, I can imagine.
I came up with a system. So if I get several requests for Careless Whisper, and I don't really want to play it. I've played it before, and it just cleared the dance floor, and men sort of look embarrassed, and then you've emptied the dance floor. But about 20 seconds into Careless Whisper, I bring in... Pony by Ginuwine. I don't know if you know that track, but it's got a very... It's a slow song, about 70 BPM, similar to Careless Whisper, but it's got a very heavy bass line. It's very sort of a sexual song that one might grind a lady to.
if you see what I mean. And it just sort of brings it a bit
don't
more
go any
up,
further than that, please. But
well, I won't.
Okay, fine. It's late at night, so, you know, it's okay, but that's graphic enough.
Have I painted a picture for you? I mean, Tommy, a minute ago you were talking about what rhymes with station.
But they can't touch you for that. They can't touch
erection
you for
erection section. I was shocked.
Somebody else said it, that.
Yeah, it was me.
And thought that was dangerous, and I merely said that, you know, something else rhymes with station. So
I was surprised to hear that, Tommy, actually.
Okay, well,
your show's not normally in the gutter like that.
It's nice to... Well, one foot in the gutter.
This show is, so... Don't be that surprised.
Oh, they asked Derek Jameson what the new Daily Star newspaper was going to be all about, and he said, kitchen bums, roll-up fags, QPR, and one foot in the gutter.
And nothing changes.
No, nothing changes. Still works.
You can be in the gutter.
Anywho.
You're looking up at the stars.
When I worked in the Bird's Nest in Twickenham, I was rocking along. It was my first night. It was a kind of a disco pub.
Okay.
And the manager came up to me after I'd been DJing away for about an hour, and he said, can you get them off the dance floor? I said, what? He said, I want them off the dance floor if they're dancing and not drinking.
Careless whisper, mate. That's what does it.
No, I had to go... He said, you're not playing it loud enough.
Really?
He said, if you don't play it really, really loud, they have conversations and then not drinking.
And they stop drinking. Yeah.
So he wanted it really loud and undanceable.
Yeah.
And I think it is the only occasion when I played... Some of the songs, that records that I kept for example, if we had to go and do a bash at the Home Guard, I played Donald Wears Your Trousers.
Wow.
Just sort of taking the mickey slightly
what
out
about
of the course.
Hold the Barrel Steady. Did you play that one?
And that's a good song, isn't it, though?
Yes, it is.
I've never played that at a disco. But thank you for the memory.
Yeah. Great memories, Tommy.
Great memories. Happy days. What a boy.
Thank you. Yeah, well, don't get me started. Don't get me started on You Love Timmy Mallett.
Yeah, mysterious man. Julian, a mysterious man, and I'm grateful for your call.
Thank you, Tommy. Thanks
for having me sometime. Donald Wears Your Trousers. Does that mean anything to you?
Yes.
Oh, you do know that one.
Yeah, wasn't there a kid on your show who sang it? Or on a Saturday morning TV talent show, a little Scottish kid who brought it back for the 80s, and he did all the different verses where he pretended to be Elvis, and there was a little kid.
You remember aspects of my career better than I do.
I'm having
another one of those moments.
Maybe he was on Opportunity Knocks and appeared on your show.
I think that's a bit more like it, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
But there was a little Scottish boy in a kilt who used to sing it when I was a kid.
What was his name, the singer? Andy, cherubic-faced Scottish man who always used to sing, wearing a kilt with one knee twitching. He had a huge hit with, There was a soldier, a Scottish soldier, who wandered far away. there's a very clear dividing line between when the modern world began... And it was when people stopped finding George Formby and Norman... Quick dementia moment. Norman Wisdom. Funny.
Oh, my mum finds him hilarious. He irritates me.
And Andy Stewart was in the charts.
Andy Stewart.
A Scottish soldier was number one.
Was it?
Yeah, it was. And when that ended, there was a real moment in time when Macmillan was Prime Minister and... Donald Wears Your Trousers was pop music.
Yeah.
And Norman Wisdom was considered funny.
Yeah. And then the Beatles happened.
Because
my dad always says, you've got to understand, pop music was crap before the Beatles.
And they invented sex.
They did.
What used to happen before?
Their long hair, how scandalous.
But what used to happen before? Because they're... John Betjeman, no, Philip Larkin says that sex was invented sometime between the Lady Chatterley's trial and the Beatles' first EP. And that is about the size of it, isn't it? The modern world began around about then. This was, the sort of early mid-60s.
Yeah, which brings us to Christine Keeler.
Our telephone number again is
0344 499 1000.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
So Christine Keeler passed away, and we're talking about that. Rick's our next caller in East Yorkshire. Bear with us a second, Rick, we'll be right with you. Christine Keeler, does that mean anything
to
your generation?
It does, because, well, one, that photograph was iconic, wasn't it?
Yes.
There was a film that I remember seeing.
Yes.
And a friend of mine worked at Clifton, which was the big hotel now, but was a great big country house where the scandal happened, where she used to meet Profumo.
Right.
So for me, I used to go there quite a bit to see my friend. So for me, it's quite a close thing.
A real thing,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, and I just remember thinking that it was the Mandy Rice Davis comment. He would say that, wouldn't he? And the fact that these two very young women were caught in something so serious.
Yes.
It kind of ruined her life, didn't it?
My mum taught her. She went to Raisbury Primary School and she was in my mum's class. The family lived in a disused railway carriage. And they were what we would now call chaotic.
Wow.
So she was probably... she was probably affected by her childhood and her upbringing before she drifted into that kind of world, I think. Profumo was an interesting character, though, wasn't he? I mean, he was no Sean Connery lookalike.
No.
And yet, he married a Hollywood film star, the woman who was the wife of Dr. Frankenstein in the original Frankenstein movie.
Oh, right.
Beautiful woman, stunning woman. He had her at home, but he also had a need, he thought, for Christine Keeler and Mandy Rice Davis.
Yes, very young women.
Well, he would, wouldn't he? He would say that, wouldn't he? Has passed into MI5 and MI6 usage as a... they type it... They write it in pencil at the corner of a transcript of somebody's interview if they say the obvious, but for biased reasons.
Yeah.
They call it a Mandy Rice Davis response.
Yeah. Very sassy, wasn't it, that response? Considering the power... in those days, was not with her.
Well, I think our courtrooms as funny as they used to be.
No.
You can puncture another one of my urban myths if you like. You've killed off three already in tonight's show. And then this one, again, is about the Beatles.
Go on.
Well, apparently, there was a case in court, High Court, Old Bailey, and one of the defendants mentioned the Beatles.
Mm.
And the judge did the judge thing. He went... looked over his half-moon glasses and went, "Who or what are the Beatles?" And the counsel for prosecution just threw this remark in, which has become quite standard. He just said, "Oh, they are a popular beat combo."
Oh.
Have you heard that one?
Yes, I have.
A popular beat combo.
I probably used it.
Love
it
the phrase,
so funny.
Popular beat combo.
Because
that's so stilted, isn't it?
Yeah.
So... sort of pre-pop bands.
Is that where it came from?
They were
from?
Called combos.
Mm.
They are a popular beat combo. Malud. He was actually the fifth... Profumo was the fifth duke of somewhere like Tuscany or something. So, I mean, you would have thought that MI5 had their feelers out on him. I mean, goodness me... his surname ended in an O.
Well, it means...
they're a giveaway for a start. How many Anglo-Saxon names and surnames end in an O?
It means perfume, doesn't it? Perfume.
Does it? Does it? Mm. There! More evidence! What were MI5 doing in those days? Rick's on the line from East Yorkshire.
Hi, it's Cafe Tommy.
Hiya.
Hello, Rick.
All right. But to Kath and Ian about a year ago, I discovered Talk Radio, and I mentioned to Kath and Ian, I said, I wondered when they'd be bringing back Mr. Boyd and some of the old gang back from years ago. And glad to hear you back on the radio, Tom. It's brilliant, back on Talk Radio.
I'm very much enjoying being what we doctors call peripatetic, just sort of popping up in an emergency.
Yeah.
It's rather nice, really. But thank you for those kind words, Rick.
Yeah, I just a little bit of a change of gear, if you like. I just wondered, what's your thoughts on Trump and this
decision to move the American embassy into Jerusalem, do you think he's just, the man's just wanting to be provocative? And can he be really so naive to think that it's just not going to cause so much trouble?
Well, you know what? I don't think any of us, I don't think any of us were aware of any of the wrangling about Jerusalem prior to Trump saying that he was going to do what every president has always said they are going to do, but never did, which is to declare that, as far as America was concerned, Jerusalem was the capital of Israel. And I've been there. And I wasn't aware of any of that when I was there. Or in the years since I've come home. And then Trump does something, and it attracts all the attention that it would do if it's another Trump gaffe.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're looking out for, is like, what's he done now? You wake up in the morning and you check your news just to see if Trump's done anything overnight. And often he has.
Yes. Definitely.
I have heard all the ramifications of the significance of declaring Jerusalem rather than Tel Aviv to be the capital of Israel, but I have to admit that I'm new to it. And I think, of course, he's playing for his home crowd, isn't he? It's a move which is...
Yeah, I was going to say, Tom, do you think he's trying to take away, deflect his own audience from, you know, the things with Russia and things like that? I think it's more about that, more about taking the heat off.
Yeah, that's possibly a good call. I don't know if he's that subtle.
No, it's about as subtle as a sledgehammer, isn't it? So you're probably right there, Tom. It's probably...
Just like stirring things up, I think.
I heard the suggestion that he's caught in the Bible Belt because there's an election in Alabama soon.
Yeah. Yeah, and apparently his vice president is... an Orthodox and very enthusiastic Christian. And the American ambassador to Israel is Jewish. And I believe some of his inner sanctum are also practicing Jews.
Well, Ivanka's converted, hasn't she?
I did not know that.
Yeah, so there's Jared Kushner, who's his son-in-law, is Jewish.
That's right, yes.
Yes. It seems he can't go a day without... I mean, why an American president is on Twitter and uses it, you know, the way he does, is just... It's beyond belief, you know, really, that somebody can be, you know, so provocative in nearly everything he does. Like you said, there's a day goes by when he's trying to stir up the hornet's nest for somebody.
Well, I don't know. Look, our lives are very mundane, really.
Yeah.
Very grey. And I can remember I was working in Fleet Street when the story broke that the leader of the Liberal Party had allegedly hired a hitman to murder his gay lover. And in the presence of another journalist, I said something rather naive. I said, oh, God, how awful. And the reply from this lady was, are you kidding me? It couldn't possibly be more interesting. And we all need as much interest in our lives as possible. So, assuming he doesn't start World War III...
Yeah.
And assuming he doesn't hurt and damage emotionally and physically any of the people who will start complaining that they can't make ends meet and that they're being abused, Trump is actually colouring all of our lives.
Yeah. He's definitely a figure of... interest, so I say, you know, and
his campaign team have just published a book about being on the campaign trail. They're no longer with him on the campaign trail with Donald Trump. And one of the things that's come out, and this doesn't surprise me in the least, is that every day Trump ate at least one of the four major food groups, which are McDonald's, KFC, pizza, and Diet Coke. And Bill Clinton once finished a box of 12 donuts. I read, because he was great, wasn't he, Clinton? I mean, he knew how to manoeuvre his way around a scandal and come up smelling of roses.
Oh, definitely.
You know,
you think Trump ever thought he was going to win then, Tom? You think he
no, I don't, and I liked the conspiracy theory that what he was actually planning to do was to use having a good run at the White House, but which would end in failure, in order to set up a right-wing media organisation that would rival Fox News and all the right-wing talk shows that they have on American radio. So he may well have been as surprised as everybody else, and he may have been a bit disappointed, because after all, he's had to work now.
Well, didn't Ivana say that his life now is worse than it was before?
Yeah,
he can't do as he pleases so much.
He can't tell people to do what he wants them to do.
No,
and I
only kidding.
And we know as well that he's not worth. I'm worth more than Donald Trump, right? Let's be absolutely clear about that. I have more money than Donald Trump. All of it, everything that you see, golf clubs and planes and hotels and what have you, borrowed cash.
Yeah.
Now, which is the bank he borrows from? Is it a German bank, isn't it?
I think it is.
I was reading.
He
also has a system of putting his name on other people's buildings. So they look like his, but they're actually not.
Branding, that's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But as long as he is not hurting too many people, there are plenty of people who are claiming that he's causing them hurt amongst minorities and indeed, blimey, amongst majorities.
And women.
Yeah. And let's hope that is not the case, that is not causing too many people too much pain.
I think the trickle-down effect of him saying what he feels whenever he feels it and not thinking too much about it, though, has had an effect on other people feeling like suddenly they can declare some quite unpalatable feelings.
Well, you know, I tried it about 2 weeks ago. I was having a conversation with somebody in a different profession from the media. Mm. And I felt that we were beating about the bush. So I went to the heart of the matter straight away. And it felt good.
Yeah.
It felt good.
Well, these are people who don't feel powerful and they feel resentful of being told what they can and can't say. So all of a sudden they feel free again.
For the first and only time in my life, I told it like I really thought it was. Mm. And it felt good at the time. I felt brave.
Yes.
I actually said to the person, I said, look, I'm doing a Trump here, but this is how it is.
Yeah.
And then afterwards I felt awful.
Yeah. I don't think he does, though. Trump has never been told no, has he?
I don't know. There are lots of amateur quack psychiatric profiles of Trump and the early life that he had. The thing that's most often thrown at him is that he might have something of a narcissistic personality disorder. But that's a very specific thing.
I don't know whether it's even... Well, I mean, there's no point trying to diagnose someone from afar.
But, no.
But he's certainly been brought up to expect to win.
Yeah.
And, you know, his father was like that too. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Say again, Rick?
No, I was saying, do you think they'll try and impeach him then? Do you think they'll try and get him out? Do you think he'll serve his term?
Yeah.
4 years.
Well, what do you think's going to happen, Rick?
Well, I think I wouldn't surprise if he gets a second term.
How do you think it's going to pan out?
I don't think he'll get a second term, but I think if they were going to impeach him, they would have done it by now.
Yeah, I was reading some the other day, I don't know if it was yesterday, that some Democrat was trying to put some, forward to impeach him, yeah.
Sam, how do you think the Trump thing's going to pan out?
Yeah, I'm with Kath. I think that if anything was going to happen, it's gone past the point in which it would have.
Okay, but again, see, you kids, I'm old enough to remember Watergate, which was the only parallel saga that we've had, and it took an age. It took an absolute age. And what happened was they knocked off people below Nixon until it was only Nixon left.
Yeah.
And they're knocking off people
beneath... That has started to happen, hasn't it?
Trump.
Well, who's the guy who said that he'd never, categorically never met with the Russians and it was proved to be a lie? Now he's kind of turned...
Flynn.
Yeah, he's turned evidence, hasn't he?
He has. And he's heading for a reduced jail term of possibly 6 months, where it may have been many years. Mm. It's kind of ironic that he was one of the cheerleaders of the Lock Her Up chant on the Trump campaign, and he is going to get locked up. I think they might say to Trump, look, we don't want another messy impeachment or threat of impeachment. How about you just lumber through, and then in 18 months' time you say that you're going to announce that you're not standing for a second term, because you'll be nearly 80 by the time it ends if you win.
I don't think he will admit that. I think he'll just say, I've got better things to do with my time. This is, you know.
Yes.
He'll have to go out punching.
Yeah, and he needs a few successes.
Mm-hmm.
If it's going to play to his ego. So let's... OK, go ahead. Call Jerusalem the capital of Israel, if that's what turns you on. Fine. And, oh, yeah, you can have your capital tax reductions. Yeah, fine, go ahead. Have that. One more. You can have one more triumph, so that at the end of your term you can say...
Job done.
I did what I said I was going to do.
Yeah.
I drained the swamp. Well...
Populated
reduced it. Reduced its level. So that you could see the backs of a couple of alligators. Rick, thanks for your call. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, great show, guys.
Yeah, it's kind of okay. this type of radio is kind of okay, isn't it? Well, it's late at night.
I never quite feel like... When people say that, it's nice. It's nice of them to feel like that. But it's a bit Steve Wright, isn't it?
Well, that is a great show, actually, I think.
Well,
He never misses... I don't know how somebody can just never miss a beat.
He pre-records it all, that's how he does it.
I've heard that, yes. Some of the canned applause and laughter, I think, is...
Yeah, they all know their roles, don't they?
Yeah. Can you fake a laugh?
Not really.
I wouldn't want you to try.
I'm a bit too northern, I think.
God, there's another conversation started up. We've only got 20 minutes to go.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Northerners can't fake laughs.
Oh, no, I just think it's made me a bit too... I'm a bit cynical, maybe. You know, from... Lancastrians are traditionally dry.
Dry?
Yes.
But could you fake a laugh if your life depended on it? You see, you can almost cry, can't you, at will?
Yeah, but that's not fake.
You can't laugh
at will. That's just because I'm carrying a lot of emotion.
Well, I read that if it proved necessary that you needed to laugh on stage or in a broadcast... See, it works!
What did you do?
It works! There you are, I thought of something.
What was it?
Right. Oh, dear. This will make you laugh. Right?
Go on.
Sam, put your microphone up so that we can hear you in the control room, all right?
Okay.
You have to imagine the person that is with you wearing only a pair of men's socks...
Oh, God, are you thinking about me?
I'm afraid so. Because there's so many reasons why it's funny, the idea of you just wearing a pair of men's socks.
I know.
Including, obviously, why.
Yeah.
You're hitting the studio wearing only a pair of men's socks. But men's socks, Sam's gone.
Well, it's good.
That's
you
delicious.
You didn't say on the feet.
No.
My brain's instantly just going...
You're not thinking of me as well, are you? You're thinking of him?
Yeah.
Good. Can I just...
Well, how many places can you wear a men's sock? In your hands, obviously.
Ears.
Well, for
ears? Mm. Not really.
Yes, you can.
For a gentleman, there's another...
Oh, yes, flipping heck, really?
Yeah. But no, just imagining a person wearing just socks.
I know. But it's like nudists.
And it works.
Nudists, right? They've always got socks and sandals on, haven't they?
Well, in the Ealing film comedies, yes, I don't know much about nudism. I don't think there's such a thing anymore as nudism.
There is.
No.
Oh, yes. In the area where I used to work, in Hertfordshire, there is a place called the Spielplatz, which is German for playground. Okay. And it's a nudist colony.
They're getting the word colony. It makes them...
sound like they're breeding.
Well, either that or they've got some kind of incurable disease. And so they've been
isolated themselves. Well, they have.
In a colony.
You know, they have a thirst for nudity. It's
the founding fathers, they were a colony. We colonised India, but people taking their clothes off, why is that a colony?
What would you call it instead?
Brighton Beach.
A skinful.
People take their clothes off now, don't they, with impunity? And men can't. Why can men show their nipples but women can't? Is an argument that I have... a question that I have asked... in all seriousness, all my life, and never come close to being a sensible answer to it. And so I used that to illustrate the fact that life is surreal. Here we are with men walking around in the summer. They just walk around the street.
In town.
And I don't care, really.
Oh, I do.
But if a woman were to show just a quarter of a nipple... then somebody will call the police.
Well, you know, there's a movement now in America. We saw it when we went there, Times Square, a load of women standing in Times Square with no tops on. And it's called Free the Nipple. Because they're saying, you know, as a feminist principle, if guys can walk around with no tops on, so should they be able to.
I've been asking this question, honestly, for about 30 or 40 years. And a lot of people will say something really sort of dumb, like, well, it's obvious, isn't it?
Well, we've sexualised female breasts.
Yeah.
When actually... they're workhorses.
Yes, yes. Although, I suppose a question that needs to be asked, but I can't answer it, is there are men who find women's breasts arousing. Do women find men's chests and nipples?
Not nipples, no.
No,
nipples are generally quite weird, aren't they? I mean, if you just isolate the nipple on a man or a woman, they're not the most attractive thing.
I don't think so.
No.
No, I really don't think so. I don't know why men have nipples.
Well, because you all start out the same.
Yeah, but other things change.
Mm-hmm.
Surely, if we start out as being neither male or female in the womb at a very, very early time...
they prep you for just in case, yeah.
But then you end up with your parts.
Mm-hmm.
Women end up with their parts. Males end up with their parts. I would have thought that once the body has determined that it is a male, would recognise that it has no need. It's not going to suckle.
Gosh. Well, maybe evolution's preparing us for something extra that we've not considered.
Well, the other myth I've heard is that in our necks, we all have the remnants of gills that go back to when we were... marine animals.
Gosh.
That's what I read. Or maybe I dreamt it.
I'd like to believe that's true.
That's what I read.
I'm going to carry it.
And the other thing is, can you curl your tongue?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sam, can you curl? You can. Now, what I read was that if you can curl your tongue, it means that one or both of your parents could curl their tongue. If you can't, it's because neither of your parents could.
Yeah.
But that's hardly, in evolutionary terms, an important thing to visit on your child, is it? The ability to curl your tongue. It doesn't make you more... it doesn't make you better able to survive. It doesn't make you fitter. So it's a mystery again.
Does it make you a better drinker? Siphon it more?
And also, have you got a little nipple at the top of your ear?
No.
You know about this one as well.
Is it called a cow thing? What's it called? Oh, hang on, that.
I have. At the top of
like a little
your
knob.
Ear, yes, there's a little pointy bit for some people. Not of Mr. Spock proportions.
Yes, I think
just
it
a
is.
Tiny little pointy nodule. Yeah. Which many people have, possibly all people have. And again, it's a remnant, apparently, of when we had great big ears and we were, you know, mammals that... used to need a directional ears.
Oh.
If you're a horse and you've got an eye on both sides of the head, what do you see in front of you? Same goes with whales and dolphins. You've got your eyes, one eye on one side of the head, and they don't cross, you know, there's no...
yeah, they're not pointing forward.
They don't there's no point where the vision in the two eyes crosses.
Isn't that because they are not predators? It's because they're always...
running away.
Yes. Isn't that what that's about? So you get wider side vision.
That's a very good answer, Doctor.
Because that's where they'll attack you from.
That's correct.
I think that might be
well done, Keyes College. Okay.
Is that right?
That's your starter for 10. 5 questions now on animal mysteries. Is it true that our coccyx used to be our tail?
Well...
she's going for it.
So they say, but if we're descended from apes, what is it that makes an ape different from a monkey? Monkeys have tails, apes don't.
Is that all it is?
Mm-hmm. So why would we have a tail?
Because before we were apes, we were monkeys. Monkeys go back further than apes?
I don't know.
I'm guessing here, Doctor.
I don't know. Could be. A tail would be handy, wouldn't it?
A prehensile tail would, yes. Mm. One that simply knocks cups and saucers off the coffee table would not.
I suppose that's it. Maybe we were we needed to be more streamlined. Maybe we were getting it caught on things.
It's a balance thing, isn't it?
It helps. It can help with balance. You're absolutely right.
So if you're upright, maybe you don't need one.
Possibly.
Have you ever seen a chimpanzee peel an orange with its feet?
Yes.
That's mesmerising. They're more dexterous with their feet than they are... well, they're as dexterous with their feet as they are with their hands. And yet you read, don't you, about people, you hear about people, you see people. I'm sure YouTube are covered in videos of people who have tragically lost the use or maybe lost their arms and hands and can do things like paint.
Yeah, I can't paint with my feet. I can pick things up with them, though.
Can you?
Yes.
Like what?
Pencils.
So if you dropped a 10p piece on the floor, you wouldn't have to bend down. You could
pick it up.
Yeah, I do that as well. It's just laziness.
Just for fun.
Yeah, no, just laziness, really. I can't be bothered to bend down.
It's harder work to use your feet, though, isn't it?
No, not really. You can pick it up with your feet and put it on a chair. Fantastic late night conversation. I hope you're finding this as mild and easy on the mind and indeed easy on the spirit as it is intended to be. We're talking about sleep. We've been talking about films that are good for Christmas and found out that most of them are films that make us cry slightly. And you, Kath, were telling me just before we came on air that the one that always gets to you, and you even cry thinking about it, is a film called...
oh, Cinema Paradiso.
Cinema Paradiso.
Yeah, it's an Italian film.
Yeah, it's quite... it's on a lot of people's greatest films
It was very popular in the 1990s when it came out. I think it won... there was a couple of years, wasn't there, when the Italian cinema was really big at the Cannes Film Festival, and I think it won an Oscar.
They make a few films.
But they had a particularly good run where people suddenly were giving subtitle films a decent... viewing rather than, you know, completely putting them in the category of European films and it's just for the elite. So there was that, and there was also Life is Beautiful, I think, was another one. But Cinema Paradiso is just gorgeous. It's just gorgeous.
Does it beat It's a Wonderful Life? Isn't that just the most heartwarming film ever made?
But it's just Jimmy Stewart's so likeable, isn't he?
In everything he does.
Yeah.
Did he ever play a bad guy? No.
Probably.
I've come for my boy. What was that? The Man from Laramie or something. Vertigo, which was a good movie. Mm. He was sort of a hero in that, but a bit gnarled. But Wonderful Life is just such a fantastic... and the girl who played the little girl, the actress who played the little girl in that, has just passed away.
Oh, has she?
Yes.
Oh.
Zuzu.
Every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
Oh, Zuzu. No, your money's not here. It's in Ralph's house and Bill's house.
Oh, gosh, it's so good.
It is. And that awful lumbering walk that he does through the terrible thing that Smallsville became. Was it Smallsville? No. That's Superman.
It was called... well, it became... come on,
Rockridge, no.
It became named after the old... Pottersville, didn't it?
It went on to become Pottersville, but previously it was...
It was...
come on.
Oh, I can't remember.
Yeah. Anyhow, the jury's out. We will perhaps resume this conversation tomorrow from 10 o'clock. We'll also, of course, be tracking, without Kath...
Ah!
Go on.
Bedford Falls.
Bedford Falls. Good work. You were able to remember it because you stopped thinking about it.
I did.
That's how memories work. That's another aspect of memory. If you can't remember something, the thing to do is to stop thinking about it. Golfers always tell each other that if you hit your ball into the long grass, spend 5 minutes looking for it, but then stop looking for it, and on your way back to your cart, you will find it.
Ain't that the truth?
Which is a similar sort of thing. I look forward to talking to you tomorrow night from 10 o'clock. I'm Tommy Boyd. This is Talk Radio.